Hello, and welcome to The Conversation. I'm Heil Russell.
And I am Dustin Jackson.
And Dustin, today on The Conversation, we'll be discussing the life story of one of the most beloved, and yet one of the most overlooked, characters in the entire Donkey Kong universe. A character who, at one time, was fervently believed by the most hardcore Rare and DKU fans, those deviants who made visiting Rareware a religious pilgrimage back in the late 90s and early aughts, to be the next in line for his own game. We thought this guy...
You don't mean...
Well, we thought this guy was a superstar in the making. We thought, at the same time that the PlayStation was the number one video game console, and Pokemon was the hottest property in all of gaming, we thought this guy had a legitimate shot. And we were deluded, Dustin. But such was the intoxicating power of Rare, of the DKU at the time, because we were still riding the cresting wave of Donkey Kong Country mania, the huge success that Diddy Kong Racing saw during the holiday season 1997, the release of Banjo-Kazooie, the knowledge that Conker was still on the horizon. This period of the DKU is the time I'm most nostalgic for, obviously. And it still forms the spine of DK Vine. That rhymes, damn.
That wasn't even planned. You just stumbled onto that wonderful little rhyme.
I know, wow. I am basically a street poet. So, we have this era where it felt similar to the way the Marvel Cinematic Universe did around the time of Endgame, when it was red hot and anything was possible. Like, the franchise would just keep expanding, continually spinning off new characters in new genres even. WandaVision gives us an Agatha show? Yes, please. An entire show based on alternate timelines and premises? Nobody's ever going to get sick of this. And it's only natural that our brains would work like this, because even though Banjo-Kazooie and Conker weren't devised in the traditional spin-off sense, you know, a spin-off is basically when the creators of something really like one character and they say, hey, we could make a whole thing around this person. Let's do it. It's most commonly seen in television. I mean, the creators of Breaking Bad really like the character of Saul Goodman, so they spun him off into his own show. The writers who worked on Cheers, you know, they thought Frasier Crane had something going on. So when Cheers ended, they were like, let's do 11 years of Frasier.
Of course, of course. And lest we forget, Wacky Races spun off the perils of Penelope Pitstop Pile.
I wasn't going to forget because I didn't even know that.
That makes sense. I get that.
But yeah, the notion of a shared universe, people have gotten sick of it because everybody was trying to, like, ape the MCU in the last 15 years. But shared universes have been around for a long, long, long time. And at the height of the DKU, we were really, really just anticipating this unlimited expansion, because Diddy Kong Racing introduced both Banjo and Conker, and so it really felt like the rest of the cast, you know, who aside from Diddy, from a singular character perspective, and Crunch from a, I guess he's a Kremlin perspective, they were all completely original characters. They were basically unmolded clay. And so we thought they were fair game to imagine helming their own franchises. And it's not like we were completely just barking at the moon here. There were possibilities. After all, Pipsy was a reworked character from the Astro Mouse concept. Timber was going to be the star of Star Fox Adventures back before it was Dinosaur Planet and was called Dino Island. Bot's character Tricky did still get featured in that game, even though Rare naturally downplayed any relation to his 1997 debut by the time it was Star Fox Adventures. Bumper's criminal activities were further explored in Conker Live and Reloaded's press materials. TT the Stopwatch is in the Unity build of Sea of Thieves at Rare and will hopefully make it over into the actual retail version of the game at some point. But the character we are talking about today went on to become a minor, and I mean very minor, reoccurring figure in the Banjo-Kazooie series, which, at the end of the day, is not too shabby. I mean, how many characters can have entries on both Super Mario Wiki and the Banjo-Kazooie Wiki? Not many. Now, side note, do not look up this character's Banjo-Kazooie Wiki entry, because it's abysmal. It's full of inaccuracies, and I got so angry when I visited it the other day, because I was just compiling notes for this episode, and I don't usually use that as a source, but I was like comparing that and the Super Mario Wiki one, and I was like, well, I just want to see. And I was like, oh god, that's wrong.
Yeah. The Super Mario Wiki is usually pretty good.
Super Mario Wiki is an excellent wiki. For what a wiki is, you know. And yeah, the Banjo-Kazooie Wiki is amateur hour, so. And I'm not including the Jiggy Wiki, which is the secondary Banjo-Kazooie Wiki that I think was created in response to the primary Banjo-Kazooie Wiki being such a flame.
Because it was so bad?
Yeah, it was such a flaming turd that people just were like, let's just do it better.
We'll just do it on our own.
This character is one of the most important characters of absolutely zero consequence. It's Schrodinger's turtle. It's, of course, I'm talking about Tip Top the Turtle. Diddy Kong Racer, Banjo-Kazooie supporting character. He's done it all.
That's the green one, right?
He's one of the green ones.
Oh yeah. I'll pretend I know which one.
Yeah, yeah. So this is character witness Tip Top, and it's one I'm looking forward to, because this is definitely a throwback episode of sorts. Because let's be honest, Dustin, if you were to do a scientific polling of the larger Donkey Kong and or Banjo-Kazooie fandoms in the year 2024, Tip Top would rank really, really low when it comes to favorite characters, when it comes to characters that people are passionate about. But
see, that's so weird to me. But I think it's just because I am part of the DK Vine circle. So to me, it's like, oh yeah, Tip Top the Turtle, everyone knows and loves that guy. He was in Diddy Kong Racing and the Banjo series. But yeah, you don't see anyone talking about that guy now outside of this little circle.
And it's part of the problem of Diddy Kong Racing sort of being memory-holed with subsequent generations, because it has not been commercially available aside from Diddy Kong Racing DS in 2007, but you can't even readily play that nowadays. So it has had a very, very sad diminishing effect on all of the characters and concepts from Diddy Kong Racing. But what I want to do with this episode, Dustin, is we're going to be talking about the in-universe life story of Tip Top and what a story he's had. When I was breaking down these show notes, I was actually surprising myself, somebody who considers himself a tip-top scholar. I was surprising myself with how well his story hangs together. And it's not really compelling, but it could be compelling. You know what I mean? It could be considered, like, top tier when you rank it against other Rare or Nintendo characters. So what I want to do with this episode is remind people the magnificence of Tip Top. And we'll also explain to some of the younger folk out there how big Tip Top was in a very brief window of time back in the late 1990s. So we're going to have some fun with this, Dustin. I hope you're ready. I hope you've brought your A game.
Oh, I always do when it comes to Tip Top the Turtle.
Which is not a skill set that you often get to use.
Oh, yeah. I finally get to bust it out for everybody.
So, before we get to that, I do want to remind people we have a merchandise store on TeePublic. And if this episode convinces you to join the cult of Tip Top, we have the shirt for you. It's the Slow and Steady Wins the Race shirt on our merchandise store. And it's a lovely pink shirt that says, I docked in the Tip Top suite on it. And it's covered in off-white stains. And if you don't know what this means, we'll explain it to you in just a bit. But I think this is
great.
This is not just high fashion. This is a work of art that you can wear.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it and you know what it is. You just, if you look at this shirt and you think, that's a shirt I need to own, that's awesome, I guess.
The brilliant thing about it is it's referencing an obscure thing that's an obscure thing from an even more obscure thing.
Yeah, it don't get more obscure than that.
It's got layers, which I feel like is a requirement when you're in the Tip Top suite.
Yeah, it's kind of a thinker. You look at those white stains and you're like, what's the story here?
Yeah, let me just read you the description I wrote on the merchandise page and then we'll move on.
Okay.
This is the Slow and Steady Wins the Race t-shirt, by the way. It says, don't rush through booking your holiday plans. Let the anticipation build and build as you edge your way to the shores of Spiller's Harbor. Always sticky and never tricky, it's been a favorite for seamen since the 1970s.
Jesus.
Yeah, I think he would like it. It's now on sale at dkvine.com/merchandise. What more can I say?
Yeah, it really does speak for itself.
We're also on YouTube. If you love this content, you can find even more on YouTube. Not only can you listen to all episodes of The Conversation that we put on YouTube, but we also have original videos. We have Twitch archived videos from your Twitch streams, Dustin.
What an honor.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I've got the DKU Lore Tour series. I'm working on a couple of other things right now. Haven't had a lot of time to devote to it in the month of March because I've been doing two conversations a week, but April will see my schedule clearing up once we go back down to one episode of The Conversation a week, barring any huge news or anything that requires us to jump in and just churn them out. But yeah, our YouTube channel is growing slowly, but hopefully this is our year to become certified YouTube, not stars, because we'll never be stars with this content, but hopefully we'll have a dedicated niche audience, just like Tip Top's fans. And you can find us on YouTube, youtube.com/DKVine. Or you can reverse that, dkevin.com/YouTube.
I love that there's so many different ways to do it. You can mix it up.
We're dyslexia friendly here.
Yeah, we're really forward thinking.
Or backwards thinking.
Yeah, whichever way you want to go.
Right. It's wonderful. Now, Dustin, I talked about your Twitch streams. Now, you and your band of roommates, the Idaho Crew, they are effectively a DK Vine spinoff unto themselves. You're basically the Laverne and Shirley to our Happy Days, are you not?
That's true. I think that's a fair assessment to make.
Yeah, and you stream every Tuesdays at twitch.tv/DKVine, or wait for it, DKVine.com/Twitch. Pow!
Wow. Crazy.
In 5,000 words or less, describe to me the Idaho crew and what your ethos are.
Okay. Wow. Thank you for giving me that wiggle room with the word limit. So it is me, Adam, Andrew, Cameron, and sometimes Tito. We just play whatever we DKU games we feel like. Lately, we've been kind of alternating between a few things. We just did a nice Smash Brothers night, a nice easy Smash Brothers night. And before that, we did a non-DKU game, Blast Core. We don't do non-DKU games often, but we figured it has that rare connection. But we've also been playing Miitopia, and forcing that to be DKU. That's been very fun.
I've been starting to put up the Miitopia archives, the VODs, on our YouTube channel. They don't get a lot of attention. People aren't really checking them out because it's Miitopia. I think it's a shame because they're the funniest streams you've ever done.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we've been having a great time with them. It's a great way to have characters like Evil Acorn make their grand return
Yeah,
in a way.
what you've done is you've basically created DKU fan fiction, but have it
Yeah,
playing
that's
out on
perfect.
screen where you've got Evil Acorn. Well, you got Ted the Boat Builder, you've got Babs Buff Brass from Grabbed by the Ghoulies, you've got Mr. Pants.
And Peter Griffin, that's our main party.
Yeah, you also added.
Mr. Pants, Peter Griffin, Babs, Ted, I think are the main characters of the story.
Yeah, because in the Idaho crew's ideal DKU, it would also involve the cast of Family Guy.
Yeah, they just go so well together. No, it's awesome since you can you can just put faces on whoever you want. You can get K. Rool in
Yeah.
there, Wallace from Wallace and Gromit is there, the whole gang.
It's like 80% DKU, and then it's your own indulgences. But
Yeah.
I will allow it. If you want content that isn't filtered through my rigorous, like, own obsessive compulsive disorder, and you want another perspective, another group's input, check out the Idaho crew. They stream every Tuesday on our Twitch channel, twitch.tv/DKVine, at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Well, it's 6 p.m. Idaho time. Anyway, also really quick, I want to give a shout out to our live stream. So we do live stream these conversations, most conversations, for our $5 and up monthly patrons. And right now we've got the Snake Fighter 64 once again representing in the live stream chat. We got Porygon Q. We have Just Andre. I will be checking in with the live stream as we go. Per usual, if you would like to listen to episodes of the conversation live, complete with all of the technical difficulties, misspoken phrases, and just audio warts, become a $5 and up
Some
patron.
casual nudity.
I'm completely naked right now, but I am not on camera, so it's okay. It's still work
Yeah, it's
safe.
fine.
So if you'd like to get in on that and interact with us as we go, dkvine.com/Patreon, or hold on, patreon.com/DKVine. You see what I did there, Dustin?
Oh my good golly.
I'm so accommodating. I am as thoughtful as the character we are discussing on this episode.
Yeah, almost.
Almost. So, Tip Top the Turtle, Dustin. And
I love that guy.
yeah, first off, let's settle this right here and right now. How do you spell his name? Because it seems like there's no clear consensus on this, even at Rare. There is no style guide that says this is how you spell or display Tip Top's name. While the fandom itself quickly settled on Tip Top, just TIPTUP, all one word, only the first T being capitalized. That was quickly decided on by the fandom of the era. The Diddy Kong Racing Manual went with Tip Tup, and I realize they're pronounced the same way because it's the same name, but both T's are capitalized. It's a compound word, but both T's in Tip Tup are capitalized. And I feel like that's just...
It's a strange way to do a name.
It's a strange way to do it. It's the way Star Fox Adventures, like, stylizes all of its terms in the game. Like, everything in the game is like, a compound word with two capital letters. So, considering the Star Fox Adventures team was the Diddy Kong Racing team, effectively, maybe they just like to do that kind of thing. But... other games would suggest it's hyphenated, Tip hyphen Tup. And while that is also plausible, I think the fandom had it correctly. I think just Tip Tup, one capital T, no hyphen, wins out by sheer inertia. We've all just collectively decided this looks the cleanest. This is the easiest way to do it. Why make our lives more complicated?
Yeah, exactly. It you don't look at it and say, oh, what's up with that extra capitalization in the middle? What's up with the hyphen? It's just smooth as butter.
It is. And I feel like Tip Tup should be smooth. I mean, not in the personality sense, because he's quite awkward.
Right. That's what we love about him.
I just mean his body. Like, underneath that shell, he should be smooth and wiggly.
That is how I like my Tip Tups.
So, obviously Tip Tup is a character who bounces between the Diddy Kong Racing games and the Banjo-Kazooie games. Now, Tip Tup obviously first appeared in Diddy Kong Racing, but the chronological first reference to anything related to Tip Tup is when Banjo and Kazooie time-traveled to 1978, in Banjo-Kazooie Grunty's Revenge, the 2003 midquel to Banjo-Kazooie and Banjo-Tooie, which was set in 1998.
Yeah, I like that game. I don't know about you, Heil. I don't know if that's like a hot take around here. I'll say it. I like Banjo-Kazooie Grunty's Revenge.
Yeah, I think it's all right. Like...
not like we did a whole podcast on it or anything.
We did a whole podcast about it, and one of my favorite YouTube comments came from Matt, where they just basically said, how can you talk this long about Banjo-Kazooie Grunty's Revenge? And I'm just like, we kept it short. What are you talking about?
Yeah, you haven't seen how long the conversation can go. You wouldn't last 2 seconds in our world.
I could talk about Banjo-Kazooie Grunty's Revenge longer than most people could talk about Breath of the Wild. Guaranteed.
Wow. I don't doubt that. I think you're right. I don't know if I can go that far.
I'll throw down with you. You have no chance, people. So,
oh my god.
Grunty's Revenge is a brilliant game, and I've likened it to kind of the Rosetta Stone of Banjo-Kazooie lore. It provides so much context, so many details for so much of the backstory of Banjo and Kazooie's side of the DKU, their own little corner, you know, Spiral Mountain, Grunty's Lair, what have you. And, you know, it gets into things like the Jinjos being the original inhabitants of Spiral Mountain. It gets into when Gruntilda, like, moved into the area. It fleshes out Mumbo's backstory a little bit. And you also get to meet a lot of Banjo-Kazooie characters as, like, little kids, or you just see them as they were in 1978. And Tip Tup doesn't appear in Grunty's Revenge, because the bulk of the game takes place in 1978, and so Tip Tup probably hasn't been born yet. But... and I can feel Dustin bracing himself for this, because I've talked about the Tip Tup.
We all know what's coming.
No, yeah, I've talked about the Tip Tup suite quite a bit on DK Vine and the conversation over the years. So I don't feel like I need to go too in-depth about it. But the Tip Tup suite is this lodge that Banjo and Kazooie stumble upon in the 1970s. It's kind of a love den. It's even got this lava lamp, you know, just for extra time appropriate lordness. And I guess Lava Lamp is a brand name. We don't know if it was Lava Lamp brand motion lamps, but you know what I'm talking about. It's a nice red gelatinous blobby lamp.
I love those.
I do. I actually want to get one just because, I mean, they're, I think they're fire hazards. Like, you know, you have to monitor your lava lamps. You can't just leave them on willy-nilly or they will burn down your house. But yeah, and whoever was last in the tip-top suite, they left the lava lamp on. Granted, there are a bunch of gruntlings in there when Banjo and Kazooie like break in. So maybe the gruntlings were just like, ooh, lava lamp. And they just like turned it on while they were in there. But yeah, the tip-top suite is a lodge in the resort town of Spiller's Harbor, which itself is accessed from a portal, from an entryway in Spiral Mountain, similar to the other worlds that are accessed around Spiral Mountain and Grunty's Lair in Banjo-Kazooie and Banjo-Kazooie Grunty's Revenge. So
yeah,
the tip-top suite, which is named as such because you get the little like location card that pops up when you enter the room, it's the only reference to tip-top within Grunty's Revenge. And by the way, tip-top here is spelled with the hyphen, tip-hyphen-top, which is the canonical name of the tip-top suite. But my theory is that this is where Tip-Top the Turtle was conceived.
Yeah, I mean, with how much mess was left behind, it's a wonder any made its way inside, but yeah.
Oh, I'm trying to keep a clean Dustin, unlike the Tip-Top suite.
Sorry, everybody.
Yeah, no. Granted, I'm scanning my show notes, and I wrote Tip-Top's father had huge loads, so I don't know how much I wanted to adhere to that cleanness, but okay, let me just quickly gloss over the grimy details here.
Okay.
The tip-top suite has, like, purple shag carpeting. And it has a bunch of mysterious off-white stains splattered all over the carpet. I mean, all over the carpeting. Like, just drenched, right? So
yeah, it's like a rainy day inside.
Yeah, it's like, oh boy, there's gonna be a 2-hour delay for school today. We're gonna have to wait. We're gonna have to wait for this to kind of melt off a little bit before we send the kids out.
My theory
back when I played Grunty's Revenge, and then I actually got to posit this theory to the artist who designed the tip-top suite, Pete Hentz, who I first met at E3 2015. And, you know, Pete Hentz doesn't have many people coming up to him and being like, oh my God, Grunty's Revenge. Oh my God, you designed the tip-top suite. I love the lava lamp. Now, let me tell you about my theory about the stains on the carpet. But I got to do this, and it was a magical moment in my life, Dustin. And I suggested, could this be where Tip-Top the Turtle was conceived by his parents, and that those stains splattered across the carpet are the crusted seepage of their vigorous lovemaking? Turtle on turtle shellacking. Emphasis on shell.
Pretty good. Pretty good stuff. Good podcast.
Yeah, I thought it was a good chat I had with Pete Hentz. Pete Hentz loved it and endorsed it, and Banjo-Kazooie Wiki, why aren't you updating that? They're not carrying through their stated mission, which is to be the ultimate repository for Banjo-Kazooie knowledge. How can you do that when I give you this gift from on high? Basically, Moses carrying down the stone tablets and saying, look what Pete Hentz said about the tip-top suite. He agrees with me.
It's canon. It's word of God.
So, does this mean Tip-Top was conceived in the year of our log, 1978? I thought a lot about this, Dustin. You know I have. I've pondered this,
of course,
long and hard in the shower, in the quiet moments of the day where you're just lost in your own contemplation. I've thought about it, and I think it adds up. I think the math checks out with what we know about Tip Top. Because I feel like Tip Top, if you squint, he could be a little bit older than Timber and Diddy and Pipsy are coded as in Diddy Kong Racing. It's never quite established their ages other than Timber's family are friends with Diddy's family and Timber and Diddy are friends that go way back. So they're probably the same age. And I feel like, well, Pipsy at least seems to be the same age, but the others are a little bit more ambiguous. Obviously, we knew Conker's age when Bad Fur Day came out, which would put Conker a little bit older, maybe, retroactively at least. And Bumper is kind of a question mark. Like, for me, Banjo and Bumper and Drumstick always read as not kids, like young adults, maybe.
Right.
And
Drumstick was like the star racer of the island. That strikes me as someone who's made it his career.
Yeah. Like Drumstick was the racing stud, like the cock of the walk, if you will. And
oh,
he's a chicken.
Oh, yeah, that too.
Rooster. Yeah. So I think that they read as older. Crunch is an adult. But Tip Top, I think, could be the same age as Conker, where he's a little bit older than Diddy and Timber and Pipsy, but not by much. They could still get along. So I would say late teens, nearly 20 in Diddy Kong Racing, if the math checks out with the Tip Top suite.
Okay, I can buy that.
Yeah.
I can buy that logic.
And I do believe Tip Top was named after the suite in which he was conceived, because that would also explain the inconsistencies with his name, because he's named after Tip-Tup, but on his legal birth certificate, it's just Tip-Tup. But sometimes people capitalize it because they know of the suite. It's a very popular resort destination, or at least it was in prior decades before it got polluted. And this habit of naming your child after where they're conceived, it seems lewd. It seems a bit crass. But I will have you know that beloved American actor and director Ron Howard, who got his start as Opie from the Andy Griffith Show, he was Richie Cunningham on Happy Days, which spawned numerous spin-offs over the years, including Laverne and Shirley, Mork and Mindy, Joni Loves Chachi.
Right.
So Ron Howard knows what's up. He was also the narrator on Arrested Development. He directed Apollo 13. You know, big deal, this Ron Howard. But Ron Howard names his kids after where he impregnated his wife.
Awesome.
Yeah, Bryce Dallas Howard.
Yeah,
she.
That's, boy, I don't know if I would like that.
Yeah,
if it were me.
Ron Howard made a mess in Texas,
and now everyone knows.
And everyone knows. Yeah, so think about that next time you watch Jurassic World, the third one, whatever it's called. I don't care. It's bad. It's a bad movie. But yeah, I believe Tip Top's parents followed in Ron Howard's stead. Or maybe Ron Howard got the idea from Tip Top's parents. But, yeah, knowing what we would later know about Tip Top's own progeny, I wonder how many siblings Tip Top has. And maybe they're all variations on Tip Top, or maybe there's, like, Sweetie, and or maybe there's, like, Spiller. A lot of possibilities there. But if Tip Top has siblings that you know, are in the double digits, I would like to know all of their names.
Yeah, I mean, I'm waiting. I want to know all, like, how many did he say he had?
Well, Tip Top has 20 children.
Okay,
yeah.
That's not as many as I thought it was, but still a good amount.
Yeah.
That's still more than most people.
Yeah. So this has been the semen portion of the conversation. We're done. We got through it, everyone.
It's over already.
Yeah, no, we'll come back to bodily fluids later on. But for now, we're done. And we're done with that substance at the very least. Let's move to Diddy Kong Racing, okay?
Okay.
A little palate cleanser here. So Diddy Kong Racing was Tip Top's first appearance in anything, his debut. And he was introduced as part of the group of animals, woodland critters, who reside on Timbers Island at the time of WizPig's incursion. Dustin, would you like to read his instruction manual bio from Diddy Kong Racing?
I would love to, Heil. And may I just say, I think I've even mentioned it before, maybe. I love when manuals have character bios. It's my favorite thing.
It's one of the things that sets Diddy Kong Racing apart from Mario Kart. Mario Kart will just list the characters and tell you how heavy or light they are.
Yeah, I want to know what they want to eat, where they sleep. But okay, I'll read Tip Top's now. Tip Top, trademark. High acceleration, lightweight, excellent handling, medium top speed. Tip Top the Turtle is another member of the close group of animal friends, but because of his nervous and maybe even slightly clumsy nature, he's never been particularly fond of the racing that the others seem to like so much. Now, though, he doesn't seem to have much choice.
Yeah, I think it's forgotten how Tip Top was portrayed in Diddy Kong Racing. He was like, and this anxiety riddled klutz.
Yeah. I like that. This is probably my favorite interpretation of Tip Top. Whenever I think back to Tip Top. Woo.
Yeah.
I always think of him as just this neurotic little guy running around, and I just always remember his voice clips.
Yeah, Tip Top's voice is very like Pee Wee Herman screaming, like, you know, just let me read to you the second page of the in-manual story, because this is where Tip Top comes into the actual plot. And I think it's relevant because this is the most prose we have ever seen Tip Top involved in. And it shows how he interacts with some of the other characters, kind of lays out his deal, which is important if we're going to be breaking down Tip Top's biography from this point forward. So I'm taking the hit here. I will read this.
Sweet.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Timber was trying to calm the excitable Pipsy so that he could understand at least part of what she was saying.
"He said he'd help us," she squealed, making Bumper and Tip Top wince as the pitch of her voice soared in and out of audible range. "He said he wanted to find a champion to go after that horrible pig once and for all."
"Slow down, Pipsy," Timber urged, trying to make sense of her words without upsetting her. After all, this whole business had been harder on the little mouse than any of them. WizPig's unwanted intrusion left your family homeless.
"Who are you talking about?" Bumper asked curiously.
"Tosh, the genie," Pipsy babbled. "He said he'd help. Really, Bumper, he did. I just saw him."
Tip Top blinked.
The genie? But nobody's seen him for 50 years," he protested.
I know, but I just did, I promise."
Timber frowned, thinking this through. "That means he must have been kicked out of the mountain, too," he reasoned. "After all, we've seen what that pig's spells can do." They all thought of the huge, leering WizPig face that had been carved into the mountainside overnight. Then they thought of the race courses, the island's pride and joy, which had been magically sealed off. That made them think of Drumstick, their friend and the island's champion racer, who had gone to challenge the intruder to an honorable race and hadn't been seen since.
"We could really do with Taj's help," Pipsy prompted.
No argument there,
agreed Tip-Top, nodding nervously. Timber scratched his head. Well, I guess you're right, he sighed, especially if we're going to get this mess sorted out before my parents get back. Well, if that genie wants a champion, I say we all get practicing, Bumper grunted, getting to his feet and snapping down his goggles. Good plan, Timber agreed. Come on, guys. Yeah, Tip-Top, even you. Help should be on its way soon, but we can't just sit around waiting. Let's get out there and do what we can. And let's just hope that Diddy Kong doesn't mention any of this to my parents.
Yeah, we all know what a tattletale Diddy Kong is.
Right. I just love... Okay, the Diddy Kong Racing story is nonsense, which is part of what makes it magical to me. Because there's just...
Oh, of course.
It's full of so many, like, dumb kids... media tropes, like, oh, this very bad thing has happened, and for whatever reason we just can't tell our parents, like, oh, an alien warlord wizard has descended from the stars and has basically, like, launched his invasion of Earth on our island. Well, we can't tell mom and dad because they put me in charge, so this is my responsibility. It's like, no, like, get on the phone, Timber, and call like the mole military of the Isle Hags, call the Squirrel High Command, like get the Kongs in there from Donkey Kong Island, like all the Kongs, like go to war. You like, what are you doing?
Yeah, the only time you don't call mom and dad is if you like break the family vase or whatever. You're like, oh, I gotta put it back together. If it's a giant pig wizard attacking, that I don't think that's Timber's fault necessarily. I think that is, like, you gotta get some help from people.
See, and that's why in my head, in my fanon, when I workshop the Diddy Kong Racing story, like the whole thing that Taj hasn't been seen in 50 years, my argument is, well, what if Wizpig tried to launch his invasion 50 years prior to this? You know, 1947, the year of Roswell. So what if, like, Taj trapped Wizpig in his own lamp and they were both trapped in there together? And what if Timber was the one who rubbed the lamp and unleashed Wizpig? That would explain a whole lot. And then that would put...
Because it's his fault.
Yeah, that's his fault. And then that explains where Taj has been and why Taj and Wizpig are, like, already just these natural rivals. So... That being said, I do like the little bit at the end there where he's like, come on, guys. Yeah, Tip-Top, even you, you fucker.
You idiot turtle.
Like, you're we're waiting on Diddy Kong, big time video game hero, and he's going to bring some of his like associates, this Banjo and Conker guys. We don't know what they're all about, but Tip-Top, like, you're as good as it gets right now. Like, you're gonna have to like pull your weight here. And I forgot
he is like the Chucky Finster of the group.
Right, I forgot that they wrote him with like a nervous stutter in that story.
Yeah, I don't know about this, you guys.
And I also forgot that Bumper grunted when Bumper says, I say we all get practicing. Ugh. Which, knowing what we know about Bumper, is very clever foreshadowing. Bravo.
Oh, of course.
Bravo, Lee. We do know that Tip-Top lived on Timber's Island at the time of Diddy Kong Racing. This was confirmed by Lee Loveday in Scribes, circa 1998 or 1999. So, like, at this point in time in the story... Tip-Top is a Timber's Island native, so anything that comes after that, this is where he lived in 97.
I like that. I like that Timber's Island is home to many different characters and creatures.
Yeah, yeah. And can we just talk about Tip-Top's design really quick in Diddy Kong Racing?
Of course.
Because... obviously, Tip-Top has gone through numerous reinventions as far as what he looks like over the years. He's very unique in this regard, because while other characters in the DKU their look evolves over time. Sometimes for the best, sometimes for the worst. It's always like building on what came before and evolving it slowly. Tip-Top is very special in that he has a look in Diddy Kong Racing, a Kev Bayless design. And he has another look in the Banjo series, which is an Ed Bryan design. And they've kind of attempted over the years to maybe marry the two, but never 100%. So Tip-Top in Diddy Kong Racing is kind of what I always think of when I think of Tip-Top. Just because,
same
for me, like it's the one version where we've had renders of it and not just in-game models. And so I feel like this is my default de facto Tip-Top in my head, where he's just a turtle with a rounded head and inexplicably human teeth.
I hate those teeth, and they only get worse in Diddy Kong Racing DS.
Yeah, they're kind of tolerable in Diddy Kong Racing, the original.
Yeah.
I have a theory about teeth and DKU characters. Basically, the smaller the teeth are, the less they bother me. But the bigger they get, the weirder I feel about it.
Yeah, I get that. I think it's fine if, like, I can, some characters work with big teeth, but I think if your character starts with smaller teeth, like Tip-Top here, and then you go to Tip-Top in Diddy Kong Racing DS, it's a lot.
Right. It's the same problem I have with Toothy Grin Donkey Kong, where it just looks like he's wearing huge dentures, and he's almost taking the piss.
Yeah, exactly.
I have a theory about Tip-Top's teeth. What if he is wearing dentures?
Gosh, what if? Could you imagine such a world?
Well, okay, because if Tip-Top is so nervous, so riddled with anxiety over all things, he's probably deathly afraid of choking. And so he thought, you know what? I need to make sure I properly chew my food. And the only way I can do that is with simian teeth in my face.
Right, that is, I mean, that's just such an obvious answer to his problems.
And of course, as he ages, he just keeps buying bigger dentures.
Yeah, he has to work his way up to advanced chewing.
Yeah, he's the kind of person who chews like 100 times before swallowing, and he counts. That was 10.
My love for Tip-Top was at like 99.9%. I think he just knocked it down to like 97.8 with that.
Well, be glad I didn't do all 100 chews like I was originally going to do before I realized that would just be terrible podcasting.
Yeah, I would have left.
Yeah. So the thing about Tip-Top too in Diddy Kong Racing, he's got these orange fingerless gloves, and I thought they were driving gloves, and I guess they could still be driving gloves, but you would think you would want to leave the fingers on your gloves.
Yeah. I like these gloves. I think just this one little article of clothing really, it, you were saying before how you consider this the like de facto Tip-Top.
Yeah.
I think the gloves really help, since his design in Banjo-Kazooie, I don't think it's like bad, but it's pretty basic. It's very NPC, which is what he is. So it works.
Yeah.
But here it's like, oh, I see these gloves. This gives him a little extra push to being like an actual character worth caring about.
I imagine it's hard to really accessorize a turtle, a cartoon turtle, because you don't want to draw the obvious comparisons to the Teenage Mutant Ninjas. So it's like, okay, well, what can we give this turtle to set them apart from just being a turtle? And you don't want to cover up the shell. The shell is like a big part of being a turtle. So that just leaves the head and the hands. And, well, you know, a lot of turtles don't have fingers either, so, but, you know, it's like, you could maybe put cute little shoes on them, you could give them a saucy, like monocle, you could give them a stylish hat.
Little hat.
Yeah, something jaunty, yeah. But really, at the end of the day, he's in a racing game, he's on an island that's all about its racetracks. give him driving gloves, even if he's not really one to race. He avoids it, but that makes all the more sense that he would don these gloves, because he's like, I'm going to get blisters by gripping the steering wheel too hard. I need to put on these gloves for my own protection.
Yeah, also, everyone else on the island is racing, and you know, I feel like the one thing Tip-Tap would fear more than actually racing is not fitting in with his peers.
Yeah, so I was also watching the what few cutscenes there are in Diddy Kong Racing, which just amount to the first time you defeat Wizpig and the characters attempt to have a party, and then the party at the very end when they actually defeat him, at least for the time being. And it's interesting, the first party, like, you have characters dancing. They're doing the really, like, limited animation N64 dancing, where they're just kind of swaying wildly in, like, little pairings. But what's interesting is Tip-Top is not really dancing among them. He's just running around the beach. And I don't know if it's just, like, nervous energy on his part. Like, I don't know how to dance. Oh,
I don't know how to mingle with anybody.
Yeah, he's just kind of like running like an idiot back and forth. Maybe he just really had to go to the bathroom and he didn't know how to ask, hey, may I be excused?
He's just like, get out of the way.
But by the time you beat Future Funland and they think Wizpig blew up in the atmosphere of a neighboring planetary body, Wizpig is leading the conga line coming down the bridge from Dino Domain. He's in a conga line with Bumper, Taj, Banjo, and Crunch, which is what a group of characters. Like, what a unit of DKU characters that is. We've got the star of like the most widely beloved, effectively Donkey Kong spinoff. You've got a supporting character from said spinoff. You've got the character who publicly masturbated and went to jail for it. You've got the slightly insensitive stereotype genie who's nonetheless like probably the most pure-hearted character in the entire shared universe. And you've got a Kremlin who saw the good in his supposed enemies and basically is a turncoat to the Kremlin crew. I just love this conga line, Dustin.
Same. This would be a great party for an RPG.
Yeah, put them in Miitopia together.
Oh, I feel like we have all. We might not have Crunch. I think we have the others, maybe. And if not, we can make them.
I just love that Tip-Top suddenly had the confidence to be like, hey, does everybody want to grab my hips? And we'll do a little...
I'll lead the conga line.
We'll wiggle together. It'll be great. I feel like this is where Tip-Top really started to assert himself.
Come out of his shell?
Yeah. He's been just completely overshadowed by his insecurities for like a solid 19 years before this. And he's like, you know what? I was just in space. I was just on an extraterrestrial planet. I just faced down this interplanetary warlord and I survived. And yeah, I feel like dancing on this bridge.
Yeah, he has earned it at that point.
Yes, he has. Andre in the live stream said prosthetic racing teeth.
I guess that would be what his dentures are.
I mean, yeah, like, perhaps. Like, I don't know if they sell them on Timber's Island. Like, what benefit would having teeth in your mouth serve you if you race?
They keep the flies out.
They keep the flies out of your mouth if you've got nothing, like, to protect it that way. Yeah, yeah, I like that. Yeah, and Andre also points out, obviously it was Bumper who took Tip-Top up on his offer of someone grab me by the hips. Yeah, there's just so much foreshadowing for all of these characters' arcs in this game. For those who say the DKU was not planned out, that it was just a happy accident, I say to you, look towards this conga line and tell me they didn't have the next 27 years planned out.
Jeez.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I mean, it couldn't be more obvious.
So, when Banjo-Kazooie was getting ready to come out, Dustin, there were like rumbles. It was like through different promotional things that like, oh, you might be seeing some familiar characters in Banjo-Kazooie. And we didn't know who that would entail. Obviously, there's conspiracy theories that Donkey Kong was supposed to be in the game at one point, maybe facilitating things like Stop and Swap. There was the Naughty in Click Clock Wood, but the big cameo character in Banjo-Kazooie turned out to be Tip-Tup, the turtle, who now...
I would have guessed.
Yeah, now Tip-Tup resides in Bubble Gloop Swamp and runs the Tip-Tup Choir. Because apparently, like, we didn't know Tip-Tup is a musician. And a classical musician at that.
Yeah, I like that. I like that it gives him a little more to work with, gives him some interests.
Tip-Tup writes swamp music. And, you know, fair play, he didn't have any traits in Diddy Kong Racing other than, I don't like to race very much, and, those were his two traits.
I am scared easily.
Yeah, so to actually give him a passion, like something he can hang his non-existent hat on because he's wearing dentures and racing gloves instead, something for him to say, this is what I'm about when I'm not peeing myself. I think it works, even if it kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Like, even if they don't hint at it, it's just cool to give him, like, his interest in music just didn't happen to come up in Diddy Kong Racing. And why would it?
Why would it?
And, you know, yeah, the stakes are a little higher right now. And it's cool that they're able to give him something to latch onto afterwards.
If Tip-Tup was in Donkey Konga, I would expect his love for music to really come up all the time. And he wasn't.
Oh, man, could you imagine playing the bongos on Tip-Tup's shell?
Oh, my God. So many missed opportunities. I mean, unfortunately, they couldn't. They couldn't do that because Tip-Tup is a rare-owned character. So
yeah,
you can't put him in Donkey Konga, especially not in that era. It was just a hard separation in the early buyout years. But okay, we know he lived on Timber's Island. Why did he relocate to Bubble Gloop Swamp? Well, I've got some theories about that, Dustin. As you probably imagine, I do. Like, this shouldn't be a surprise to you that I have theories about this. So,
oh, not even a little.
In the instruction manual, it only specifies that Pipsy's family was rendered homeless when Wizpig took over the mountain, basically commandeered it. However, what if a lot more characters lost their homes during the events of Diddy Kong Racing?
I mean, I would assume Wizpig wouldn't just stop after Pipsy's house.
And what if he, like, leveled a bunch of homes out of spite?
Yeah, exactly.
Because I think this little bit of lore that Tip-Tup relocated between November 1997 and June 1998, I think this is a fundamental underpinning of a understanding the DKU pre and post 1998, because I think there was a mass migration from Timber's Island following the events of Diddy Kong Racing, following the events of Wizpig taking over the island, establishing his own little, like, interplanetary fiefdom. However briefly, yes, they expelled him, they toppled him, Taj took control of the island again, and presumably, like, shared the power with Timber's family, but that was still going to be a very traumatic event for the denizens of Timber's Island, especially those who were forced from their homes. And so I feel like after that, a bunch of characters said, let's get out of here. Like, it's just not worth it. Let's settle down elsewhere in the Rare Archipelago, find our own quiet little corners where maybe Wizpig won't come back. And I think Tip Top is just one of the many that left. He's the only Diddy Kong racer native to Timbers Island that we know left. But it helps explain why, before Diddy Kong Racing, you never saw much in the way of anthropomorphic animals in the DKU, aside from Kongs, bears, and Kremlings. But after Diddy Kong Racing, you'd start getting characters like talking pigs. So many talking pigs, Dustin. Oh my god.
Way too many.
Too many. We had a saturation point with the pigs. Talking hippos, talking weasels, and they would start appearing in Donkey Kong games even. Like, the cartoonification of the Donkey Kong series really ramped up after Diddy Kong Racing. And I would say we might owe that to a mass migration in early 1998.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a perfect theory. Just that perfectly makes sense. Why would they want to stick around when there's a giant pig that can potentially destroy your house?
And because Tip Top is anxious, because he's got so much anxiety, I feel like he could not sleep peacefully. Every little noise, he would think, Whizpig is back, Whizpig is back, Whizpig is back. Even if Tip Top didn't lose his home, I think Tip Top was like, I can never return to any state of normalcy here on Timbers Island. I have to pack my bags. And so he got out. He moved to Bubble Gloop Swamp, which is, you know, when you factor in that you probably can only access Bubble Gloop Swamp from that entry point in Grunty's Lair, it is a tucked away remote location. And he probably thought, like, I'm safe here in this, like, pocket realm of swampiness. And it's here where I can work on my craft at long last. I can devote myself to my music. And so, with a bunch of the other turtles who already lived in Bubble Glue Swamp, he founded the Tip Top Choir.
Just a bunch of like-minded turtles ready to make some music together.
Six turtles. We don't know their names. They're all, well, they've got different colored shells, but I think they're wearing, like, shell coverings to really, like, set them apart, like, in the choir. Like, I'm the red guy. I'm the orange guy. I'm the blue guy. I'm the light blue guy. You know.
Just, I'm the cyan turtle. I'm kind of the wacky one.
You know, we couldn't get those eggs, but at least we had the multiple colored turtles in the game.
Yeah, close enough.
Pretty close.
Oh my god, are they all the same colors as the eggs?
We're missing a green one. There's no green shelled.
Oh, so close.
So close. But yeah, the Tip Top Choir, this is where it gets really stupid, Dustin. So if you thought this was intelligent fair, if you thought this was a high-minded podcast before now, this is going to just be chucked aside into the bin at this point, because the Tip Top Choir resides in the belly of an enormous tortoise by the name of Tank Top. But to get in to see the Tip Top Choir, you have to crawl into Tank Top's mouth and go into his belly. However, the room that the Tip Top Choir is in looks like a shell. So how are they in his belly? That's not how tortoises work.
Yeah, where is the logic here? I mean, to be fair, most turtles also would not talk and play music.
You got me there. Checkmate. Well, luckily, I have a theory for this as well.
Oh, of course. I was waiting for it.
Yeah, so after the terror of Whizpig, which for us, for the gamer, it was all just fun and games. It was a high-spirited racing adventure across exotic landscapes, through a volcano, into space. But for the characters who lived it, especially the natives of Timbers Island, it was just sheer torture. It was not a happy holiday season for them. And
yeah.
After Whizpig, after the threat of Whizpig subsided, and Tip Top couldn't feel secure on Timbers Island, he needed that security. He needed that sense of protection to really work on his art, his music. And so He went to Bubble Gloop Swamp, and he had Tank Top, a tortoise he befriended, swallow a structure made of a smaller tortoise shell, in which his choir could then work out of, from the safety of Tank Top's stomach.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that makes sense. Where did they get this smaller turtle shell?
I mean, I don't know. It's a dead tortoise. I don't know. Like, I'm sure.
Okay.
I'm sure you go digging in a swamp, you'll be up to your neck in shells and what have you from all the dead turtles.
You can't take two steps without finding at least five turtle shells.
So, yeah, my theory is they're inside this waterproof and apparently like digestive proof shell that Tank Top swallowed for them, so they can go into Tank Top's mouth whenever they want and practice their choir. And because they are in a living tank, I mean, it's in his name, Tip Top feels secure and he feels like he can truly be the musician, the artist that he was meant to be. And that up until now, his anxiety, his nerves held him back from actually achieving his life goal. And so, that would explain why it looks like you're inside a turtle shell when you're in a stomach. It makes complete sense, and it's not stupid, Dustin. Banjo-Kazooie is not a stupid game. It's scientifically accurate. I would say it's the most scientifically accurate video game ever devised, so long as you come up with bullshit explanations for every little thing that flies in the face of that.
Yeah, when you start making up the logic, it actually works perfectly.
Right. I mean, God, why can't people see it? So, what is the connection between Tip Top and Tank Top? Because we don't actually know the names of other turtles or tortoises in the DKU, at least individual characters. We've had some drones, we've had some baddies over the years, but as far as just, you're a unique character, you're a unique turtle, it's pretty much Tip Top, his son later on, and Tank Top. And so it's entirely possible that Tup is a common suffix in the rare archipelago for testudines. Like, I wouldn't say that Tank Top is a relative to Tip Top any more than Dixie Kong is related to Diddy Kong. It's just a very common naming convention.
Right. If you're a turtle,
yeah.
Not all turtles have Tup in their name, but a good chunk of them do.
It's like Smith, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, I think Tank Top agreed to swallowing their music room, their little choir headquarters, because he seems to be kind of an idiot.
Yeah. I think that's fair to say.
You know, it's common DK Vine terminology that arise from Banjo-Kazooie that NPCs in which you have to do some stupid little quest for to get the big prize, be it a Jiggy or Golden Banana or Pagey or what have you, we called them mindless idiots who ask for your help. Because most of them are incapable of doing the simplest task. And nowhere more in Banjo-Kazooie is this exemplified, is this on display, than Tank Top. Because Tank Top says, "Oh, I'm cold, help me. I don't know how to not be cold." And so what Banjo and Kazooie do is they slam his feet and make him retreat his limbs inside of his shell. And then he's like, "Oh, I'm warm now, thank you."
Yeah, that's strange. I love his screams, though.
Yeah.
Very iconic DKU scream.
I love making Tank Top scream into the night. I do. Don't get me wrong, Dustin. That is my joy. That is my happy place right there. But Tank Top as a character is one of the dumbest pieces of shit we've ever encountered in all of these games.
Well, to be fair, I guess what's he going to do? He's this giant tortoise. He has a choir of turtles inside of him. It would probably disrupt them to jostle himself around and do anything to warm up.
I mean, yeah, but I think it's to be expected if you're tipped up in his choir, because you're inside of a giant tortoise. You wanted this. You asked for this. So don't be complaining when he has to put his limbs inside of his shell because he's a little bit chilly in this humid swamp. Like,
right, you got to take the bad with the good.
Right, you want to be protected from space wizards. This is what you have to roll with. It's one or the other, Tip Top.
I think it's a pretty good trade-off, honestly. Protection from space wizards.
Yeah.
For a moving turtle.
Yeah.
Tortoise.
So can we talk a little bit about his Banjo-Kazooie design versus his Diddy Kong Racing design? Because you and I have both just said that his Diddy Kong Racing design is our, like, ideal. It is what we think of when we think of Tip Top.
It makes him more unique.
And this is one of the few instances where an artist, at least on a surface level, completely redesigns a pre-existing character from the ground up in their own signature art style. So we went from a very Kev Bayless design with Tip Top and Diddy Kong Racing to one that just screams Ed Bryan in Banjo-Kazooie. And it, this, you know, I'm not an artist. You are, Dustin. Maybe you can explain, like, the differences. Because I can usually tell when I see a DKU character, if they are from Rare or Playtonic, which artist probably was responsible for that one. Like, I can generally tell Steve Mayle's designs from Kev Bayless's designs. Although, they share a lot of similarities, those two. Ed Bryan really has his own style. His characters are kind of distinctive. And, yeah, it's wild seeing Tip Top as an Ed Bryan design just half a year after Diddy Kong Racing.
Yeah. It's very weird. Even I'm looking at them side by side in the show notes right now, the Diddy Kong one and the Banjo one. Kev Bayless' Diddy Kong Racing one has the smaller pupils, which kind of help his nervousness, I think. You know, he's very wide-eyed, like, oh! And the Ed Bryan tip-top in Banjo-Kazooie, he has those big, soft, cutesy character eyes. But I think that's more, like, just a lot of characters in Banjo-Kazooie have those eyes over the Diddy Kong Racing style eyes. What I think is interesting is the shell is very different. In Diddy Kong Racing, it kind of has white trimmings, one might say, white little decor on top of it, like there's the big cross on his back. And then it's just a normal shell in Banjo-Kazooie. I don't know. Honestly, it's really hard for me to tell, like, the style, besides the obvious things like the eyes and the shell, but I can't really see what would make one more Kev Bayless and one more Ed Bryan just off of these very simple N64 models. I do prefer the Diddy Kong Racing one. The Banjo-Kazooie one is a little plain, but it works. It works for what that game is, where it's a game just filled with just, oh, this character is an animal.
Like,
that's all we need. He is a turtle. He's a conductor. Bam, good. But yeah. I think with Diddy Kong Racing, if they're playable characters, you got to have a little extra flourishes to them.
Yeah, like, there's also the thing you run up into in the Banjo-Kazooie games where the NPCs are just larger than Banjo-Kazooie in general. So, like, Tipped Up kind of towers over them in this game, and it's not supposed to be literal, you know, it's like, it's just, that's the way they designed the game, where, like, the NPCs are just made of bigger polygons, and they're just not as compact and efficient as the playable characters.
Yeah.
I mean, compare Mumbo in Banjo-Kazooie to Mumbo in Banjo-Tooie. So, but for me, like, Tip Top's head is also just a little bit more elongated in the Ed Bryan Banjo-Kazooie design. Like, it's not as round.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think the eyes are made more cutesy, but everything else about him is a lot less cutesy than the Diddy Kong Racing one.
Yeah, Now, they did retain his blue eyes, at the very least. That's one design aspect that is carried over. But the question I've always had about Tip Top in Banjo-Kazooie is, which came first?
Ooh.
Because Diddy Kong Racing and Banjo-Kazooie were in development at the same time. It's just that Diddy Kong Racing got to a releasable state far quicker than Banjo-Kazooie did. And so there was a lot of, like, back and forth. Diddy Kong Racing, from what I've learned, Diddy Kong Racing was always going to introduce this idea of a rare shared universe. Conker was always in it, or was in it from a very early stage. And, you know, as it went on, it kind of snowballed, and then they decided it needs to have a Donkey Kong character headlining it per Nintendo.
Right.
And so it became Diddy Kong Racing from Pro-Am 64. But I've always thought, and I've never had this confirmed, mind you, this is just speculation, and, you know, I've asked around and people don't really remember. Was there just a turtle in Banjo-Kazooie that the Banjo-Kazooie team named Tip Top when it was clear Diddy Kong Racing was coming out first? And they were like, oh, wait, we could name this turtle we have in Bubble Gloop Swamp Tip Top. And then it'll be like, they're connected. It's like we have this all planned out. Because I just have this hunch that this was not supposed to always be the turtle from Diddy Kong Racing. Like, the or was there a turtle in Diddy Kong Racing that they then named after the turtle in Banjo-Kazooie when they were trying to, like, add all these things to, like, launch the shared universe?
Could see that. It that is an interesting scenario where it feels like it really could go either way. I don't know which theory I lean towards more. For some reason, it seems more probable to me that Tip Top would have been named first in Banjo-Kazooie, and then they used that name for the turtle in Diddy Kong Racing. I don't know why. That just seems more likely to me that, like, maybe the names of these characters came a lot. Like, this is a purely hypothetical scenario, of course, but it just strikes me as, like, maybe we had these characters. Some could have had names, but I feel like for a racing game with brand new characters, the names of those characters maybe are not, like, the most important thing until, like, you could get to the end of development and then say, oh, shit, we gotta name all these guys. Well, there's a turtle in Banjo. Let's name him that Tip Top as well.
Yeah, I know, like, the internal, like, file names, you know, it was Turtle, what was in there for Tip Top, and it wasn't...
Yeah, just a placeholder name.
Yeah, but I do think that they probably had a lot of that sorted out by the summer of 97. So it's just a matter of how far Banjo-Kazooie was in development. Did they have another name for this turtle in Bubble Gloop Swamp, or did they have no name for him, and then they were like, oh, let's name him after this, because Banjo's going to debut in Diddy Kong Racing, and that'll be a fun, like, connection and callback. Like, but it I don't think it was ever the case where the Banjo-Kazooie team was like, well, we got to get somebody from Diddy Kong Racing in there. Let's put Tip Top in as a choir leader, because it is just out of nowhere, and also, there's no, like, dialogue where when Banjo and Kazooie enter, Tip Top's like, oh, hey, Banjo!
I remember you from Diddy Kong Racing.
And, like, later on, in his next appearance, I feel like they tried to harmonize a little bit more. Like, there's more of an effort to kind of bring them, the two Tip Tops, if you will, in sync with each other and kind of strike this middle ground. And that was Banjo-Tooie. So, 2.5 years later, Tip Top reappears, again as a minor character, just facilitating a jiggy for our duo. But if you thought Tip Top being a choir leader was a massive swing that came from seemingly nowhere, from what you thought you knew about the character in his prior appearance, then, oh boy, Banjo-Tooie really just upended everything, because now Tip-Top fucks.
Yeah, it's one of his strongest character traits, apparently.
Well, yeah, I have in my show notes here, and I apologize. I won't incorporate this as part of the show. I'm just reading my show notes after the fact. I said that Tip-Top, like his own daddy, shoots massive loads, and I apologize. I would never make that part of this show. But in my show notes, I felt like it was important to contextualize that so we, the host, can convey that in a more demure tone.
Yeah, like Tip-Top fucks.
Right, exactly. You know, we're keeping it family-friendly here. So, here's what we learned about Tip-Top in Banjo-Tooie. By this point in November 2000, Tip-Top has 19 kids, all girls, and the 20th is on its way. It's yet to hatch. Yeah, what are your thoughts about that, Dustin?
I think good for him. It's cool that he has so many kids, I guess.
I guess, yeah.
Yeah, as long as he's happy. As long as he has a good family life, I guess that's fine. I don't know what the average amount of babies a turtle has is.
Well, that's what I was going to say, because I feel like we lose sight of the fact that Tip-Top is a turtle. As he says in Banjo-Tooie, I'm a reptile. Like, and he's not saying that to excuse like the sheer amount of offspring he's produced, but it is like the simple fact that his mate has laid a bunch of eggs. And like, so this is the curious thing about Tip-Top in Banjo-Tooie, because Tip-Top has always been portrayed as just like a swamp dwelling turtle. Like, right. Being a box turtle. Like, I don't know exactly what type of turtle Tip-Top is supposed to be coded as. But all of a sudden in Banjo-Tooie, they're, like, using sea turtle logic with Tip-Top. And Tip-Top is not a sea turtle.
No.
Because he's taken the egg to Jolly Roger's Lagoon near, was it Turtle View Cavern?
Something like that. I don't remember the exact name, which makes me feel really embarrassed because I love Jolly Roger's Lagoon so much.
Well, it's always a bit convoluted because you tend to forget Tip-Top's role in it, because it's not a jiggy you can get until you come back later.
Right.
Because you have to blow the crack in Mumbo's skull to get to the actual beach where Tip-Top is at. You can kind of view him from Turtle View Cavern, hence the name, but you can't actually do his jiggy until you come back and Kazooie can hatch stuff with her butt. So anyway,
I just looked it up.
Yeah.
Do you want to know how many eggs on average the green turtle lays?
Tell me, Dustin, tell me.
On average, green turtles lay a mean of 110 eggs per nest.
Damn.
Yeah, so Tip-Top's actually being pretty, he's holding it in a little bit.
So let me correct my show notes. Tip-Top shoots conservative loads.
Yeah, he likes being a father, but not that much.
He just puts a little pinprick in the condom. It's just... That's not how it works. We're giving people an inaccurate explanation of biology here. I apologize. It has nothing to do with the volume of semen. Just to be clear.
No. Yeah. Don't let us steer you wrong.
No, it just takes one sperm. And sperm and semen are not equatable. So... Do not take any life advice. Like, don't listen to the conversation and like, I know how birth control works, because you are going to screw things up for yourself. Please.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. So, like, I think when Diddy Kong Racing came out, like, I thought Tip-Top was far more of a kid than he was eventually retconned into being. But I do think the retcon works of him being slightly older, especially when you factor in the Grunty's Revenge dating. I think, like, having him be a slightly functioning adult kind of works for the character. Like, he's high-strung, he's full of anxiety, but I could also see him, like, moving to Bubble Gloop Swamp, getting his career going, and finally having some stability and security, and then he meets a lady. For all we know, the mother of his children is in a tip-top choir. We don't know.
We don't see who lays the eggs.
And maybe that would be a power imbalance to have your conductor, your composer, like, romancing you. But workplace romances happen all the time. It's just
right.
natural that when people work in close proximity to each other, sparks will fly. There's going to be some sexual tension there. And before you know it, they're making beautiful music between the sheets. And so we don't know who Tip Top's mate is. We don't even know if they're married, but they've definitely reproduced. And we can actually date this a little bit, thus. This is going to be very exciting. I've done the math. Okay? So assuming his 19 daughters were all part of the same clutch, the same nest of eggs that this 20th egg is a part of. In Banjo-Tooie, Tip-Top says, "It's my baby. He's about 32 weeks late." So 32 weeks before the events of Banjo-Tooie, which was released November 19th, 2000, would be April 2000. Roughly around April 9th, April 10th of that year. So that is when Tip-Top's mate laid her eggs. Now, do we know when they conceived? Can we do the math on that? This is where it gets tricky. And I don't mean the Diddy Kong Racing / Star Fox Adventures character. We cannot precisely say when they did the nasty, because a turtle can store sperm. And we've come back to sperm. I'm sorry, but
sorry, everybody.
It's part and parcel with talking about Tip Top. It just comes up and drips down. It just gets everywhere. A turtle can store sperm after mating for several months. Did you know that, Dustin?
Of course I didn't.
The gestation period can be anywhere from 2 to 4 years, depending on the turtle species.
Wow.
So, we do not know when Tip Top canonically had sex prior to the events of Banjo-Tooie, but the incubation period for the eggs are about 60 days naturally. So if they're 32 weeks late in November 2000, that means that they hatched April 2000. So that means they were laid in February 2000.
Wow.
Yeah.
We really learned something here today.
So roughly after the events of Mario Party 2, when Donkey Kong is fighting to name the theme park after himself in the Mushroom Kingdom, Tip Top's mate was laying 20 eggs.
What a landmark moment of the DKU history.
When I bring back the time vine, the complete timeline of the DKU, that will be right next to each other. Mario Party 2, Tip-Top's mother, Tip-Top's wife / mate / girlfriend, whatever, dropping the eggs. So, as I said, Tip-Top is not a sea turtle, but inexplicably, he took his son's egg to the sea. Why? Well, I got a theory about that, too.
Okay. Lay it on me, Heil. I'm loving all these theories this episode is spitting out.
We don't know what type of turtle Tip Top actually is, but box turtles and sea turtles share many similarities in their reproductive cycles. So it is possible that this was a gambit on Tip Top's part, because his one son did not hatch. He was getting desperate, so he thought he was going to go the sea turtle route and take it to the ocean. And we're to assume that the others just hatched perfectly fine in Bubble Gloop Swamp. So he made the trek to Jolly Roger's Lagoon. Why? Why go all that distance? Well, it seems to be a protected hotspot for sea turtles to safely lay their eggs. Hence, Turtle View Cavern.
That's true. I like that theory a lot, Kyle. I like that one better than any semen-related ones.
Or Tank Top swallowing the Tip Top Choir shell.
Yeah, that one I don't know if I'm super on board with, but I see your reasoning. This one is just like a cute little thing.
Yeah, like, I can understand why Tip Top kept appearing in the Banjo games, because he's so malleable as a concept. Granted, like, him being a choir leader has nothing to do with being a turtle, but they probably got this idea of, like, oh, you have to hatch a turtle's egg like a sea turtle. And it's like, why don't we just use Tip Top again? And fine, you know, whatever. But yeah, I love this whole exchange between Tip Top and Kazooie, because Tip Top's like, I'm desperate here. Like, I want my son to hatch. I want him to come out of his shell, if you will. And Kazooie's like, why don't you just sit on the egg then? And Tip Top says, I'm a reptile, not a bird. He's supposed to get out himself. It's just, it's such stupid logic. It's like, well, I can't do
it. He's supposed to do it.
Am I gonna sit on the egg? I'm a fucking turtle. No.
that's stupid.
Like, as far as being a mindless idiot who asked for your help, I like how he comes back with some internal logic here. Like, can't be me. I'm a reptile. Dope, da dope, da dope, da dope, da dope. So Kazooie has to sit on the egg, and man, this kid is ready to come out. All it takes is Kazooie sitting in the egg for like a couple of seconds, and then he's like, whoa, I'm hatching. It's happening. Like, he could have just put like a warm heated blanket around the egg Tip Top. Like, come on.
Yeah, there's so many other options.
And then Tip Top Jr. is what he names the child eventually. Tip Top Jr. is hatched and he's on a shell. And he's just like, you know, he can't get up because he's a turtle and he doesn't know how to like flip himself. And Kazooie says, oh no, I guess he's tipped up. Ha 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 ha. And
everyone stop and laugh.
And Tip Top's like, you gotta help him. You gotta help him. And so Kazooie just whacks him.
Yeah, that helped him. I guess it worked.
It did work. And then Tip Top says, I'll take you to meet all your sisters. And they spin off into the ocean, and they presumably swim back to Spiral Mountain and go up Grunty's Lair back to Bubble Gloop Swamp. I'm assuming. But
yeah.
Tip Top's design in this game, like I said, I feel like it's an attempt to marry his Diddy Kong Racing and Banjo-Kazooie designs, because I actually like this Tip Top a lot better than the Banjo-Kazooie Tip Top. He seems a bit more rounded. He's got a little bit more texture on his shell. He's got, like, ridges on his, like, the stomach part of his shell.
Yeah. I don't know what it is about it, but this particular model does seem more Ed Bryan-y to me than the one in Kazooie.
Yeah.
There's something about the face.
It's just got that look about him that just screams, Ed Bryan did this.
Yeah.
I do, like, also, one thing we didn't talk about in his Banjo-Kazooie design, he seemed to be wearing platform shoes.
Yeah, it's weird. What's up with that?
I think those are his fancy, like, choir conductor shoes, while he has no need to wear shoes while he's trying to get his son to hatch, so he's just going barefoot. He's just showing the goods.
Yeah, he needs his famous conductor shoes. That's part of his uniform. Look, the only part of his uniform.
This is a universe where we have prosthetic golfing fingers and apparently turtle dentures to chew things. Conductor shoes, I mean, it's not that out there.
Yeah, you're right. Well, I was a fool to think otherwise.
You're a damn fool, Dustin. Don't do that again. Oh, Courtney's in our live stream. Hello, Courtney.
Oh, hello, Courtney.
Courtney says, we know when they were laid, but not when Tip Top got laid.
Love it. Love everything about it.
Yeah, Andre says, thankfully, we don't have any semen-related tip-top theories, only Word of God verified semen-related tip-top facts. So, take that, Dustin.
We just established that I'm the fool. All I can do is say, yep.
And
there's the evidence.
The Snake Fighter 64 says, come on, Heil, don't be a Dan Schneider. Now, look.
Ooh.
Tip-top is willingly showing his feet. I'm not forcing his feet to be shown. There's no power imbalance here. It would be
nothing wrong. If you want to show those turtle feet off, by all means.
Now, Tip-Top might have been a bit of a Dan Schneider if his mate did come from the Tip-Top choir and he's like, show me those, wiggle those toes for me, wiggle those turtle toes. Oh, do it. Oh, that's what people will come to see in our choir. Like, if he was that creepy about it, then yeah, we should cancel Tip-Top. But...
yeah, but there's no way to know.
I like to think it was a sweet, wholesome romance between the two. And
agreed. Tip-Top doesn't strike me as the type to be a bad guy, but I guess that's just how it goes sometimes.
We already have one too many sex pests in the Diddy Kong Racing cast. We don't need to sully Tip-Top's name.
True.
Yeah. Just to be frank. So, I promised we would be done talking about semen, Dustin.
Uh-huh.
So, let's talk about feces.
Boy, I'd love nothing more, I guess.
Because Tip-Top, after Banjo-Tooie, there was a bit of a dry spell, if you will, for Tip-Top appearances. Because he didn't appear again for a little over 4 years. But 2003 was a big year for Tip-Top references. And he was referenced in Grunty's Revenge, as we already established. And a couple weeks after that, he was referenced in Rare's Xbox debut, Grabbed by the Ghoulies. Now, like I said, he doesn't physically appear in Grabbed by the Ghoulies. He's not Royston. But Tip-Top does get referenced on a product that you can see in Ghoulhaven Hall's bathroom.
So cool.
Yeah. Do you want me to tell you what the product is, or do you want to tell?
Would love.
Tell
no, you know what? You go ahead. You
okay.
Say it.
Okay. It's a Tip-Top turtle head toilet cleaner.
Pretty cool.
Pretty. So obviously, and I feel like I have to explain this to our very chaste, very innocent audience who, they don't know these terminologies. They don't know the double entendres at work here. Turtle head references a piece of fecal matter that's poking out of the toilet, or maybe your butt.
That's what it is. That's if you're famously in the Austin Powers movies,
uh-huh.
The character of Fat Bastard.
Uh-huh.
Has a line where he says, I've got a turtle head poking out.
Okay. Well, I think you need to behave, Dustin, because Rare themselves were filthy, and nowhere was this on display more than Grabbed by the Ghoulies, which I feel like is the id of Rare in that era. Just like, it was coming all out. It was basically, let's put it all in there. Let's put in all of these gross jokes in the background. Let's put in all these references to all of these games. Like, let's make this a dumping ground for our shared universe. Like, both the family-friendly aspects of it and just the full-on raunch at work. So, you know, Tip-Top lending his name to a brand of toilet cleaner, that's as wild as learning that Tip-Top has sired 20 kids or that Tip-Top is a choir leader. It's just like everything, every new thing we learn about Tip-Top kind of flies in the face of everything we suspected about Tip-Top previously.
Yeah, it's always something with this guy.
So how did Tip-Top come to be associated with toilet cleaner? Well, my theory, because I always have a theory, is that it's an endorsement deal. Because I don't think Tip-Top would manufacture toilet cleaner. It just doesn't feel appropriate for his character. But I think he would lend his name to it, similar to the way Donkey Kong lends his name to Burning DK sports drink.
Right. I mean, Tip-Top was one of the saviors of Timbers Island.
Even though, like, I'm still not sure how much of that is public knowledge at the time of Grabbed by the Ghoulies, because Timber was like, we can't let my parents know. Like, did
right,
they?
But I feel like at least one of them would have, you know, let it slip at some point.
Yeah, in a tell-all memoir, or like maybe like they would like go on a radio show and let it slip that, oh yeah, this pig came down from space and tried to take over the Earth. The other month,
the rooster behind the wheel, a tell-all memoir.
Right, I think that. Eventually, of course, Timber's parents had to find out about something, because there is now a giant Taj sculpture on the mountainside, and like they come back.
That one's hard to not explain.
Yeah, yeah. So I think at that point, Timber would have to like just lay it all out for them. Okay, look, yeah, we had an alien incursion. I took care of it, though, because you can trust me when you go on vacation. Anyway, yeah, either because of his notoriety as being a Diddy Kong racer, or his famed music, his swamp music, his beautiful choir, maybe that got him some renown. And just like, you know, you would see Pavarotti have a toilet scrubber named after him, I'm sure Tip-Top, you know, same deal, right? Like, oh, we you know what signifies a clean toilet bowl? Tip-Top the turtle. Why be anxious about your toilet stains when you can just remove them with Tip-Top turtle head toilet cleaner?
It's funny, because I'm just thinking about, speaking of toilets, it just reminds me of Tip-Top and his newborn son being flushed back to their home.
Yeah, there was kind of a flushing effect when they spun off, right? I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, Tip-Top doesn't make many merchandising deals, but maybe, you know, the burden of raising a new family, he had to have some extra income, and so he was like, sure, you know, I realize this is not the most glamorous thing in the world, but I will lend my name.
It'll help pay for the kids.
I will lend my name to this toilet cleaner because it's the right move for the family.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. He's a family man.
And then, of course, when Baron Von Ghoul is going on his expedition throughout the Rare Archipelago, he brought back with him all manner of products from the Rare Archipelago, including Captain Blubber had the...
Was it Barnacle Remover?
No, that was Captain Black Eye.
Oh, that was Black Eye, yeah.
Yeah, Captain Blubber had the lubricant.
Right. Right. Did I forget?
The motto of Captain Blubber's lubricant was, grease up them oars, boys.
Good for him. I like when DKU characters are big enough to get product placement.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of it. A lot of it in Ghoulhaven Hall. So, yeah, I just love that Baron Von Ghoul is like, oh, yeah, I want to try this toilet cleaner for my sprawling estate back home. It's haunted.
Yeah, Tip-Top's a name you can trust.
So, yeah, I don't know. Good for Tip-Top.
I feel like more often than not, the episodes that you have me on, we always bring up poop or diarrhea at some point.
Here's the thing, Dustin. People get on my case.
Uh-huh.
For wading in the filth, as I do. But what do you expect? Look at the games we're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, they're the ones who have the poop and diarrhea and such in them.
Yeah, like, I just learned it from Rare. Being a fan of Rare, I have to then relay it to you. I'm just the middleman here. Don't get mad at me.
Oh, no, I'm not. I would never be mad at you, Heil.
I'm talking
to
our audience.
You're doing your best.
Yeah, yeah, I know. I know you realize, Dustin, I'm just doing my best. You know, I'm just...
Yeah.
Just like Tip-Top, I'm just an anxious fella trying to get by. But to our audience, they just think this pervert with a microphone needs to be silenced.
Semen? Poo-poo? No, thank you.
Hold on, I'm just writing down that, because that's a good t-shirt idea. All right. So, as I said, Tip-Top would not appear until early 2005, again, when Banjo Pilot was finally released. Now, when Banjo Pilot was first announced, when we first learned that, hey, the Banjo-Kazooie cast is taking over Diddy Kong Pilot in the wake of the buyout, a lot of us were hopeful that this would mean that Tip-Top would be a playable character, because
he's a
Diddy Kong racer along with Banjo. It just made sense. And there was a lot of disappointment when it turned out that no, in fact, Tip-Top would not be a playable character in this game. It was kind of pacified a little bit when Jolly Roger was a playable character, and we're like, that's a wild swing. I'm all for that. Like, that is just awesome that you're taking that character and you're making him playable. But
yeah, I love that guy.
Tip-Top would only appear in a very minor cameo in Banjo Pilot. He's cheering on the racers in the Clankers River track. Now, Clankers River, judging by the architecture that we see, I believe it's supposed to take place above Clanker's Cavern. Like, Clanker has been set free. He is now free to roam the river in the open air above Clanker's Cavern. So just this area of this world that we're never able to actually explore in Banjo-Kazooie, but somehow they're connected. And we have a race in this area, Clanker's River. And I think it makes sense that Tip-Top would be a bystander. He would be attending this particular race in Banjo Pilot in person, because Clanker's Cavern is one of the closest worlds to Bubble Gloop Swamp. If you take Grunty's Lair, you know, as like the your means of travel. So it's either this or Treasure Trove Cove. And I could just see him like, yeah, I'll go to the Clankers River race and watch from the sidelines and cheer on.
And that one's nearby.
Right. He didn't want to go out of his way. Right. So, I mean, he's got 20 kids at home. He can't, you know, just uproot himself to go to Hailfire Peaks. So,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, this makes sense that he would be there. And yeah, you just kind of can pass him. He's on the sidelines. And he looks like his Banjo-Tooie model, so that's cool.
Yeah, love that model.
But yeah, I still maintain it's a huge oversight not putting Tip-Top in as a playable character. Like, maybe they felt it would draw too many comparisons to Diddy Kong Racing. Maybe they were, like, leery, like, even though we own this character, like, is this us, like, trading too much on, like, what was an established Nintendo trademark? Will we get in any trouble using Tip-Top in that regard? Best just put him in as a cameo and not worry about it. I don't know the thought process behind there, but if it was up to me, Tip-Top would have been a playable character for sure.
I wonder if it's just because, look, we can't have too many characters. This is just like a Game Boy Advance racer. So we can't have too many. And, you know, Tip-Top's cool, but he's kind of farther down the line since some other, like, more than other characters. Like, Jolly Roger getting in, that is, he's not that important of a character, but he just became such a fan favorite. That makes sense to kind of graduate him a little bit. But, you know, other than that, it's really just, like, main Banjo characters. Like, Jam Jars isn't even in there. It would be weird for... I totally agree with you. It'd be great if Tip-Top was playable, but it kind of makes sense that he's not. He'd be kind of down the line.
And we can also rationalize it that he doesn't like racing. He only raced in Diddy Kong Racing because he was kind of pressured into it because it was a survival situation.
Exactly. It said he didn't have a choice.
I mean, you know, this kind of stuff is contradicted all the time in the DKU. Funky Kong hates adventuring in the original Donkey Kong Country games, and then we have him being the best at going on adventures in funky mode in Tropical Freeze. So it's just one of those things where, yeah, like, it makes sense that he wouldn't, but also if he was, we could rationalize that quite easily too, and we would love it. So, yeah. Banjo Pilot had many problems, Tip-Top not being playable is a very superficial one.
Yeah, exactly. There's bigger ones to address first.
Yeah, Courtney says, I love the important promotions that Jolly and Mr. Fit got. Yeah, I forget about Mr. Fit in Nuts and Bolts.
What a strange pick to do Mr. Fit. Like, Jolly makes sense. He was a big fan favorite. Mr. Fit's a weird one. It's cool. I'm glad they did. I love, like, any one of these Banjo characters getting to be more important.
Was Jolly a fan favorite, or did he become a fan favorite because of Banjo Pilot?
I can almost guarantee you it did not. It was not because of Banjo Pilot.
All right. Well, Tip Top then went into hibernation, unfortunately, because even though there was only about 2 years until his next appearance, there were a lot of failed attempts at getting Tip Top in another game behind the scenes at Rare. So these are all sort of almost appearances, non-canon appearances, but there was, and this is only really noteworthy because we've seen his redesign for it. He was going to be, obviously, in the Banjo-Kazooie remake they started to work on for the Xbox, codenamed Banjo X, that was only canceled because Conker Live and Reloaded wasn't a success. And
yeah,
I don't think I would have liked Banjo X because it's one of those things where they were going to remake the game and then like change things around to surprise people. And I'm just like, you don't need to do that. Just make a new game.
I see the novelty of it, but yeah, I think it's probably for the best.
But yeah, this redesign of Tip Top, I hate this.
I'm not a big fan of it either.
So he kind of looks like his Banjo Kazooie model, his polygonal Ed Bryan design, except much more polished, much more shiny, and they gave him all these like turtle spots all over his face and feet and arms and. Yeah, it's something I could probably get used to if I had greater familiarity with it, but it just seems so far astray from either Tip Top model that we are familiar with.
This really isn't that far off from the Tui design, but what kills it for me are the eyes. The eyes are just, I don't like them.
Yeah, I think it's the same problem that a lot of Nuts and Bolts redesigns had, where if you don't have the big googly eyes, if you make them smaller or you integrate them into the character model a little bit more,
you have the eyelids.
It just looks wrong because you have these very cartoony eyes and an otherwise somewhat realistic design, and it just looks like an abomination.
I really think it's the eyelids that hurt it for me. He looks like the pupils are way bigger, and then you have like the top and bottom eyelid. It just kind of, I don't want to say it's realistic because it's obviously not, but it kind of takes him a bit away from the stylized cartoony look into a weird sort of in between that doesn't really work.
One thing that the Banjo X redesign of Tip Top added or brought back from Diddy Kong Racing was the toenails.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up too. The feet are very similar to his original look.
Wail them toes, baby. Take off those conductor shoes and show us the goods, if it's okay with you.
Yeah, if he wants to, right, by all means.
I'm never going to force him to, but if it's this mutual exchange of appreciating them toesies, then I'm not going to say no.
Yeah, exactly.
The other appearance that Tip Top would have made around this time, had the project actually came to fruition, the Fast and the Furious, Dustin. Now, the Fast and the Furious is a game name that Rare reused for several games that never got off the ground. This would have been the original one, kind of a proto-Kinect Sports in a lot of ways, in that it would have utilized not the Kinect, but the like Xbox motion camera. And
yeah,
this would have been developed in late 2006 or early 2007. And like the whole gimmick behind this game was you can put yourself in like costumes of various DKU characters from
my dream come true.
Yeah, from the Banjo Kazooie series, from Diddy Kong Racing. Like there's this image of characters racing, and one of them's in a Banjo costume, one of them's in a TT costume, and there's like a track and field competition where you have four different racers all dressed as Tip Top. And they're racing each other. And what's interesting though is that we had these debates on the DK Vine forum. I was like, is this game DKU if they're just costumes? But the one character to make an actual confirmed physical appearance in the Fast and the Furious is Tip Top.
There he is.
Tip Top would be involved in a curling game where you take the real Tip Top and you slide him on a shell on the ice and try to knock over, I guess it's curling mixed with bowling, but you would knock over a bunch of penguins who are shaped like bowling pins.
Yeah, this is interesting. These would have given us new DKU characters. Look at these penguins.
Yeah, and not only that, but the design of Tip Top in the Fast and the Furious, his Diddy Kong Racing design.
Which makes sense. It is a smaller Tip Top that you can use to throw around.
Yeah, but he's even got his racing gloves back on. And like,
yeah,
this is like the most high resolution we've ever seen this model of Tip Top. And we've only seen it, like, in a presentation in, like, very blurry, standard definition, like it's a screen on a screen. Like, we've never seen the actual pure screenshots or footage of this game. So, I would love to get a better look at this Tip Top model. But, yeah, he's got his Diddy Kong Racing, like, shell coloring and everything.
It's awesome. It's so bizarre to see. It's surreal to know that we could have had like an actual physical return of his Diddy Kong Racing design.
And honestly, Dustin, one of the darkest days of my life was the day I learned about Tip Top Curling, and I learned we would never actually get to play it because they didn't show off the Fast and the Furious until, was it 2010 or 2011? It was like during the era of Kinect. The Kinect, yeah. Sports era, you had that ugly Rare logo from the day, like on all this footage, but the game itself was actually from about 5 years prior to that.
That's so crazy to think about, but yeah, I agree with you. We all remember where we were when we heard the news.
I know. I was never the same after that day.
No, I don't think I've been able to crack like a sincere smile since.
Everything's felt a little bit colder, a little bit sadder. Food doesn't taste the same. The flowers, I can't smell them anymore, Dustin.
Right. You see the face of a newborn precious baby, and you think, this child, thank the Lord, this child won't have to go through the pain I've been through.
And then I think, how much I want to pick up that child and slide them on the ice and knock over a bunch of penguins. I wouldn't have that urge if I could do it with Tip Top, Dustin.
Right. Yeah, I'm right there with you. You throw the baby at the penguins and it lets out an audible and then a single tear rolls down your cheek. Roll credits.
Tip Top's final appearance was in Diddy Kong Racing DS. Full circle. Alpha and Omega.
I love that. It's a nice bookend to the Tip Top saga so far.
Ashes to ashes, dust to dust. So Yeah, the canonicity of Diddy Kong Racing DS is always being argued by the fans. Like, you've got some people. I just saw this recently in one of our YouTube comments where somebody said, it was responding to one of my DKU lore tour videos where they said, well, Banjo and Kazooie aren't part of the shared universe anymore because they removed them from Diddy Kong Racing DS.
That's not, I mean, they did remove them. That part is true, but I mean, that's quite a claim to make.
Right. I just love how matter of fact it was. Like, oh yeah, no, they erased them from history.
And also, why would anyone want that? I think we've discussed this before. Why would someone come up and say, well, Banjo-Kazooie aren't part of this anymore?
Yeah, you've got the weird Nintendo purists who are like, ooh, no, those are Microsoft characters. And then you've got the Banjo, like, secessionists who are like, no, Banjo has to be by itself. And I'm just like, what? All right. But here's the thing about Diddy Kong Racing DS that I argue, Dustin.
Okay.
The inclusion of Teenage Tiny Kong is the Trojan horse.
That's true.
Is the Trojan horse that makes it impossible to set before Donkey Kong 64. Ergo, it can't replace the original events of Diddy Kong Racing.
Right. Yeah, you can't just say, like, oh, also DK64 is retconned as well.
Yeah, no, it's a domino effect. And there were domino baddies in Donkey Kong 64, and we don't want to give them anything to make them more powerful. So we also had a promotional postcard that was sent out from Nintendo in 2007. So this postcard was greetings from Timbers Island. And I will read this really quick. You won't believe the adventures we've had. We've raced around Snowflake Mountain and zoomed through Dino Domain. We've driven over bridges. Wow, really? Bridges? Through oceans and around volcanoes in planes, cars, and hovercrafts. And actually, hovercraft is plural in and of itself. You don't say hovercrafts, but okay. And we even ran into some old friends. Tip-Top, Bumper, and Crunch. Crunch is spelled incorrectly there, but it's fine. You may remember them from that trip we took 10 years ago. So, even from Nintendo, they're saying that Diddy Kong Racing DS takes place a decade removed from Diddy Kong Racing. So I think there's enough evidence that it is what I call a sequel remake, where it is, right. Yes, it's a remake of the original game, but it doesn't supplant or augment the original. It takes place at a separate point in the timeline, effectively serving as a sequel, even if the characters have to basically do most of the same stuff they did before.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. And so Banjo and Conker are not erased from the events of Diddy Kong Racing. They just didn't show up for this one because Conker is busy being an alcoholic king, mired in depression, and Banjo was also, like, he was just out of shape at this time. Like, he was scarfing down pizza, and
yeah, he's not gonna step away from that pizza to do a little race.
He was not in fighting shape at this point in time, and so there's plausible explanations for why they didn't participate. And meanwhile, Diddy, like, invited Dixie and Tiny to come along, so it was fine. They didn't need them. So, Dustin, why is Tip-Top back on Timbers Island if this game takes place a decade later? Well, it's not established. There's no lore in Diddy Kong Racing DS where Tip-Top says, you know, we got to be quick. We got to take care of Wizpic quick because I have to get back to Bubble Gloop Swamp because I have a I have a big concert next week and what happened.
And I also have a family to take care of.
Now, I do think, remember what I said about the when the eggs were laid? February 2000. Diddy Kong Racing DS came out.
How could I forget?
Diddy Kong Racing DS came out February 2007. So maybe for the 7th birthday of his children, or at least the 7th anniversary of their egg laying, he wanted to take his family to where he grew up. We're going to go back to Timbers Island, and I'm going to show you the sights. It's been 7 years. Wizpig hasn't shown back up. I feel confident stepping back on my native soil once again without having a full-blown panic attack. But they jinxed it. It was a jungle jinx, because that is exactly when Wizpig did show back up. And we see see Tip-Top in the opening cutscene being chased by Wizpig along with Timber, Bumper, and Pipsy. And I just love the visual of Wizpig chasing them through the jungle. And it's just, Timber's like, quick, follow me. Wizpig is right behind us. He's right behind me, isn't he? Well, that just happened.
Ooh, awkward.
And yeah, poor Tip-Top. Like, what the hell? But Tip-Top does rise to the occasion. He puts back his orange racing gloves on his fingers, and he's like, let's do this. And they defeat Wizpig once again, and they have a big party on the beach, and Tip-Top is right there with everyone else, and everyone's content and happy. And that's the last time we saw Tip-Top in the DKU. But let's talk about the big design change for Tip-Top in Diddy Kong Racing DS.
Okay.
Because, yes, it basically reverts Tip-Top to his Diddy Kong Racing design. However, they made some improvements. So they made the renders of the Diddy Kong Racing DS cast far more detailed than they were for Diddy Kong Racing. And so, like, Tip-Top's his shell, his like, the chest plate on his shell is a lot more ridged. Like, the ridges are a lot more pronounced on it. It looks a lot more...
Yeah.
Like, you can stick your finger in the ridges. Yeah, like, you can poke that soft turtle underbelly. They also...
Yeah, if you so choose.
Yeah, if Tip-Top wants you to do it, and you want to do it, nobody's forcing the other party to do this. It's all above
board. We're all adults here. We can all...
Yeah.
We all have a say.
It's all above board with Tip-Top at the end of the day. As you already mentioned, Dustin, they gave Tip-Top horrible, horrendous chompers in this.
Yeah, even just looking at this one render, and this isn't the only picture of Tip-Top that shows them off.
In our show notes, I provided a render, and it's also the render you'll see if you're listening to this episode on YouTube or SoundCloud. It's on the episode artwork. So you can see this for yourself. You don't need to go to Mario Wiki or the DK Vine Gallery. You don't need to go snooping. You can just see this and say, oh my god, what were they thinking?
Yeah, boy, and he looks horrified, too. He looks like he can barely close his mouth.
It's like he knows he made a mistake going for this size denture, and he's like, I'm stuck with it now because I'm in a Wizpig race. Like, I can't go to the dentist and get these resized. I've made my own bet.
This did not work out, but I'm going to make the most of it.
Can you see the other addition to Tip-Top?
Yeah, I can see two additions, actually.
Right. He got prosthetic golfing fingers from Diddy in this game. Tip-Top, Tip-Top has always been portrayed with four digits on each hand, either Diddy Kong Racing or, well, Banjo-Kazooie is just a mess of polygons, but we saw in his Banjo-X design that he does indeed have four digits on each hand.
Right.
Diddy Kong Racing DS, he's got five, just like the Kongs got post-buyout. And this is something they did across the board for all Diddy Kong Racing characters with four fingers. They gave them five to match the Kongs. And I think this was Rare overcorrecting because they knew the edict like was now like the Kongs have to have five fingers no matter what. And so they were like, we got to do this for all the characters, even though I don't think it's necessary for any characters who aren't, like, Simeon.
Yeah. I mean, there's no law saying all turtles must have five fingers.
Yes. Like, it's believed that this is due to like cultural stigmas in Japan for heroic characters, but there are allowances for cartoon characters to be depicted with four fingers, specifically if it's acknowledged as a Western character like Mickey Mouse or in Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, Banjo, or I think if they're reptilian, they're allowed to have four fingers for whatever reason. And so I don't think this is necessary, but I do like that when Diddy Kong returned to Timber's Island post Mario Golf Toadstool Tour, he was like, I'm back and I brought presents for everyone. These are from the Mushroom Kingdom. They're prosthetic golfing fingers.
Yeah, you'll love them. They'll open up a whole new world of opportunities.
So Tip Top is technically wearing prosthetic golfing fingers, and he had to buy new racing gloves to fit these.
I bet he didn't like that. I bet Diddy gave him these fingers as a gift, and he's like, cool, well, now I gotta buy new gloves.
To be fair, they do look like brand new gloves. They're extra shiny. These almost look like rubber gloves. Like, maybe he couldn't find a pair of racing gloves on Timber's Island with five fingers, so he had to buy, like, kitchen cleaning gloves, like, for like, doing the dishes or whatever, and he just had to use those as racing gloves.
I love that.
That's effectively canon. Like, I don't think anybody could argue us on this.
No, there's no logic to argue against it. But what I think works out great for that is that means after the race, Tip Top will have the perfect gloves for washing dishes back home.
In the live stream, Snake Fighter 64 says, I hate prosthetic golfing fingers with a passion. Get in line. Lots of people want to fight me for prosthetic golfing fingers. But here's the thing. I think prosthetic golfing fingers is the most beautiful sentence ever constructed. It's just the perfect alchemy of words in my mind. It really reminds me of how beautiful humanity can be when we use our intellect and creativity for something pure rather than something destructive. And so, for me, prosthetic golfing fingers gives me great comfort and joy. So
it's not as beloved for me, but I like it. Love is a strong word, but I like the concept, I guess.
Courtney says shell bikini, the kind of what it looks like on his Diddy Kong Racing DS design. And Just Andre says something about the lighting on those fingers makes them look like the overlapping hot dogs that comprise Donkey's fingers and all of the pre Country 2 renders. Yeah, a little bit. You get a little bit of the sausage fingers there. I agree.
Those Diddy Kong Racing DS renders are such a mixed bag. Some of them look great. Like, Wizpig, I think, looks really good in those renders.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you get ones like TT.
I'm okay with TT.
TT's Diddy Kong Racing DS render?
Yeah, I'm fine with it.
Oh, my. I'm glad. I'm glad you're fine with it. I hate it. I hate looking at it.
I do like that Rare both started their Donkey Kong games with sausage fingers, and they were able to work in the sausage fingers on their swan song for the Donkey Kong series.
The perfect bookend, not only for Tip Top, but for Rare's time with Nintendo.
Yeah, it's like the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel, just two sausage fingers touching each other.
Love it. Love everything about it.
That's the end of Tip Top's story. 2007, it feels like Tip Top should have been in more things, but he was not in Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts, which, you know, for all the reasons people have issues with that game, I think that's the biggest one for me. Like, that and the way the worlds were constructed as, like, all artificial, I think not having Tip Top anywhere in there was just this huge, massive oversight, this catastrophic blunder. And maybe it had to do with, well, we're putting Tip Top in Diddy Kong Racing DS and everybody's very sensitive about this, so even though we own him, maybe we shouldn't use him. I don't know if there is any of that discussion being had, but damn it, it makes me angry. Nuts and Bolts, it's a fine game, and it's starting to find its audience. It's starting to be appreciated in a way that it wasn't in its own time. But where's the Tip-Top? Where is the Tip-Top?
Yeah, come on.
Because Tip-Top has not resurfaced, aside from, you know, his appearances in Rare Replay, since 2007, and that is just a damn shame. And Sakurai, you're not off the hook either, my friend, because you could have used him as a spirit when you brought in the Banjo-Kazooie characters in Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. You didn't do it, and I will remember that.
Yeah, I guess it's not the perfect Smash after all.
I guess not everyone can be here anyway. We have a couple calls to take. That's not a huge turnout for this episode as far as the calls go, because as I said, Tip-Top's heyday is long in the past and not everyone remembers. But if you would like to call the DK Vine hotline, it's always open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at 1-202-630-VINE. That is 8463. Call the hotline. You know, we announce an episode topic usually about a day before we record. Gives you about 24 hours or so to call in. And then we'll play those calls if we have the time, if they relate to the topic at hand. But you can call in about anything and I'll probably hear it. Maybe I'll play those calls eventually in a CallSack episode. Who's to say? But let's go ahead and play our first call. And then we'll play our second call. And then I want to get into a little bit of history with you, Dustin, as we wrap up this episode, because I want to talk about the cult following that Tip-Top had that was very real in the late 90s.
I'd love to.
We're actually going to be dusting off some old correspondences with Rare to really illustrate the frenzy, the fervor that had been built up in Tip-Top's name, because this is lost to history, and we need to remind everyone. We need to set the record straight that at one point in time, Tip-Top was a damn superstar.
Yeah, people have to be informed of history, or else we're doomed to repeat it.
What history are we doomed to repeat? Forgetting about Tip-Top? Not on our watch.
No, thank you.
All right, let's play our first call.
Hey, this is Jennifer, aka SnakeFighter64, here to witness the character of Tip-Top. So excited to hear Kyle talk for an inordinately long amount of time about Turtle Cum, because he just, I went back and checked the tile on the floor in Spillers Harbor, just to be sure before I made this call. It's just a fucking white floral pattern. You're just a gross, gross man, Heil. Stop talking about bodily fluids, you disgusting man. Anyway, Tip-Top is cool. He's a turtle, and turtles are cool. I first saw him in Banjo-Kazooie when I played it on the Xbox, and you've talked before about wanting spin-offs of the Diddy Kong Racing characters, and that made me think of, it wouldn't be cool if Tip-Top had, like, a rhythm game spin-off, because, you know, the Tip-Top Choir. So you could do, like, a rhythm game, some sort of rhythm game with Tip-Top and the other turtles, and, you know, set it to music from other Rare games, and then maybe even other Microsoft games, and then Heil would have to have an existential crisis on whether or not having music from Halo in the Tip-Top rhythm game would mean Halo is DKU or not. Because, I mean, how did Tip-Top learn it? Oh. Jesus Christ, what is my life? Anyway, it's always fun chatting with you. Have fun recording, and please try to keep the talk about bodily fluids to a minimum. Good night.
Thank you for the call, Jennifer, SnakeFighter64. I think I kept it to a minimum, Dustin, wouldn't you say?
We could have talked way more about it, honestly.
And really, like, what am I supposed to do when the artist behind the Tip-Top Suite confirms? It's not just me being a gross man, a gross little boy. This is coming from Rare. What am I supposed to do? Am I just supposed to say, I don't believe you. We're going to negate your own word of God, your own canon.
No, we would never do that.
No. So Banjo-Kazooie Wiki, you're failing on so many fronts, but this more so than any other. It's a catastrophe. Get to editing. What are you doing?
I hope they listen to this episode and feel ashamed.
They will. Without a doubt. I think anybody listening to this episode would feel ashamed, honestly. But
listening to it, try being on it.
Oh, ouch. So Jennifer also broached upon this idea that, like, we had, basically, of a Tip-Tup rhythm game. You know, we said, what if Tip-Tup was in Donkey Konga? But yeah, what if Tip-Tup was Rare's answer to Donkey Konga?
That'd be fun. I'd like to see them. You know, I know at this point, like, a lot of people are really jonesing for just another classic 3D platformer from them. But I like seeing them branch out to other genres as well. I don't think Rare's done any rhythm games.
Here's the thing. With Everwild in development hell, and it's like they've got Sea of Thieves, and Sea of Thieves is a runaway success. It's going to be on PlayStation 5 in a month. You know, it's going to double its audience, perhaps. So Sea of Thieves is just their, like, cash cow. I feel like they have room to maybe devote a couple people to some smaller projects. And that wouldn't necessarily entail a Banjo-Kazooie game. They're going to have to outsource that, as the rumor suggests. Maybe is already happening. We don't know. But, like, internally at Rare, maybe take, a dozen people or so, put them on a Tip-Tup game. A Tip-Tup rhythm game. Because for all of my issues with the Donkey Konga series, I would actually like to see it done right. Like, full of music that's appropriate to the game itself. Have maybe more compelling and varied gameplay. And give it a story that's worthy of the characters. Give it a story that's worthy of a choir leader, a conductor, a composer who's very, very anxious about everything, who faced down an intergalactic emperor who had a bunch of kids and was conceived in a dirty, dirty seaside motel. That is...
Tip-Tup really does have a lot going on.
That's an epic video game character right there. You could do so much with the concept. And I would like to see what Rare could bring to it. Just like Rare used to always, like, take concepts pioneered by Nintendo and put their own spin on it. Oh, that's how you do a racing game? This is how we do a racing game. Oh, yeah, that's a cute little 3D platformer you had there. Now check this out. So it's a shame we never got that, you know, tit-for-tat kind of response with Donkey Konga. Granted, Donkey Konga would have never existed had Rare not been, you know, bought by Microsoft, but it would be cool to see after the fact, like, oh yeah, that's your little DKU rhythm game? Fuck you.
Here's how it's really done, you assholes.
Yeah, which is what it would actually say on the box.
On the back of the box it says, wow, I guess they really showed us how it was done.
Here's hoping, right? Thank you for the call, Jennifer.
Thank you.
Let's play our second and final call.
Hey, DKRDS. You know, one thing that always made me mad about Tip-Tup is my first experience with him was Diddy Kong Racing. And I loved his voice. You know, the, hey, it's Tip-Tup! Roar! That was great. I thought that was hilarious that when he got hurt, you know, his voice went all weird. And then, you come to meet him in Banjo-Kazooie, and the guy's voice is like, rah, 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 rah. Nothing at all similar to the Diddy Kong Racing voice. That really bothered me. I don't know about you, but that just didn't sit right with me, DKRDS. One thing I want to ask is, in Diddy Kong Racing 2, in the game that we also so want that we probably never ever will receive, just what cool thing would you like to add to it if you haven't already talked about that in this inevitable 3 hours of great content you're providing us? Thank you and bye.
It's interesting that DKRDS didn't bring up Tip-Tup's voice in DKRDS.
I don't like most of the voices in DKRDS.
No, I understand some of them. Like, yeah, clearly you have to do Taj differently because in the decade between Diddy Kong Racing, Diddy Kong Racing DS, let's not do that.
Take two.
Yeah, right. But yeah, I don't like Tip Top's new voice. Like, your DKRDS is absolutely right. Like, Tip Top had a very classic, memorable, like, his voice was most of his character, like most of the impression he left on you. So yeah, he just sounded like, I'm Tip Top. Get drunk enough, all three interpretations of Tip Top's voice, you can kind of make them all work depending on the context, but the Diddy Kong Racing voice will always be the Tip Top voice. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, totally.
As far as what I would want to see in a Diddy Kong Racing 2, well, that's a complicated question in and of itself, and I feel like that would almost be worthy of an entire conversation, because I feel like it depends on what we're actually getting when you suggest a Diddy Kong Racing 2. Is it going to be from the Nintendo side of things, or is it going to be from the Rare side of things? Because Rare owns Diddy Kong Racing, the game, and most of the characters, and most of the concepts. Nintendo owns the trademark Diddy Kong Racing, and Diddy Kong and Crunch. So,
right.
Which angle are you approaching it from? Assuming both sides would work together, and we could get just a pure Diddy Kong Racing 2 that marries both, then I think what I would want is some returning characters, some brand new characters. Like, I would want the tradition to continue of let's introduce five new characters we've never seen before and really make fans want to spin off with those characters that they'll never get.
Yeah, like Milky the Moose.
Milky the Moose. That's right. Yeah, Jeff and I talked about this. And I love Milky the Moose. Jeff used that as an example of why you would never do this again. And I would be like, but you just pitched me on an idea that's so great you couldn't not do it. That's what I would want, which I realize is completely antithetical to what either Rare or Nintendo would do. Because even by the time of Donkey Kong Racing, they were moving away from that formula. They were like, well, let's just put Donkey Kong characters in it and Taj.
Yeah, good enough.
Nah, so, yeah, but I would want, basically, to build on what Diddy Kong Racing laid down, I would want there to be more plot. I would want there to be more adventure, more vehicles, more characters, more nonsense. And I would want the tradition to continue of just falling in love with characters and then not paying off the spin-offs you'd want to see them. Just like we talked about on the last episode with Stop and Swap 2. Like, the whole joke behind Stop and Swap 2 was, this is never going to die. We're always going to leave you wanting. This is the natural state of events. And I would want that with Diddy Kong Racing 2 as well.
Right. Yeah, I totally agree. You know what I would like to see in a Diddy Kong Racing 2?
What's that?
And this is, like, not even that important to have, but what if we had more characters in the game that are just, like, NPCs on the overworld you can talk to, but they don't have to, like, do any racing? Just something to fill out the world a little more.
Absolutely, yeah.
It'd be great.
It would be great. More. I would never say no to more characters, Dustin.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. I love characters. I left being left wanting to see these characters again. I love being in a perpetual state of agony. It's how I live my life.
It's pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah, just like Tip Top. Just like Tip Top. He's my role model.
Yeah, yeah. He's always not happy.
I love him. So, thank you for the calls, everyone. In a live stream.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you for listening. Andre says, Ohio, small projects don't exist in the non-indie development sphere anymore. And then there's a clown face or a snowman face. It's Andre.
It's a snowman on fire.
Yeah, okay. Well, I was afraid Andre was calling me a clown, but I much prefer being a flaming snowman instead.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but I can dream, Andre, because look, the industry is going through some hard times right now. Mass layoffs. I feel like it has to contract a little bit, right? Like,
yeah, not maybe we will go back to a time where we can get some smaller projects.
Yeah, not everything can be, what was it, Skull and Bones was a quadruple A game. Not everything can be a quadruple A game. And the industry needs to realize that.
If you look at Skull and Bones, not even it can be a quadruple A game.
I know. The CMs are starting to show in this business model here. Just Andre also says, like Shapely Tiny Kong, all flaws are actually character development. Tip-Top trained his voice in the interim period between Diddy Kong Racing and Banjo-Kazooie after he fully dedicated himself to his vocal craft. That's bravo right there. That's a bravo Andre moment. That's how you do it. That's how you approach this.
Excellent job.
And the Snake Fighter 64 says, I really hope they retcon Tiny's design. I don't care what Heil says. I want them to age her up even further. I want her
I want her to be, like, elderly.
Well, no, that wouldn't make any sense. But I want her to, like, I don't know, maybe she injured herself and she's got a limp now. I love escalation. I love taking a character and saying, how can we ruin the appeal of this character? Like, I love that they looked at Wrinkly Kong and they were like, what if we killed her? I love that they looked at Tiny Kong and said, what if she was a teenager? I love that they looked at Tip-Top and said, what if he fathered 20 children? We need more of this.
The answers to all the questions.
I don't like characters remaining stagnant, okay? I want them to have limps and be imprisoned and just have hard times, because life is hard and I want my fictional characters to suffer along with me. So I want to talk to you really briefly, because we could get into this all night long, Dustin, but I have clipped a few letters from the Vintage Scribes letter column. Now, Scribes, of course, was the regular monthly letter column helmed by Lee Loveday on the classic Rare website, which was dubbed Rare Where, W-H-E-R-E, in which I quickly learned last year when I was preparing the episode about 25 years of Rareware that Microsoft let the URL lapse, and I quickly bought it. And now it redirects to DK Vine. I'm keeping it safe, everyone. But Scribes was really how Rare fandom communicated with each other when the Rare website launched in mid-1998. And it was very quickly apparent and made apparent to Lee Loveday and everyone else at Rare who read it that Rare fandom was often on the same page back in those days. We were all thinking the same things. And one of the very earliest things that everyone realized when you allowed Rare fans to commune with each other and commune with someone who works for Rare was that everyone really liked Tip-Top. And they liked him in Diddy Kong Racing. And then they really liked him when Banjo-Kazooie used him. And then that created this weird expectation that Tip-Top was going to get his own game. So we're going to read a couple of these letters verbatim. And in one case, we're going to read Lee's response. So I will start. I'll read the first one, Dustin.
Gotcha.
This is from Scribes, September 25th, 1998. Dear Scribes, the first time I played DKR, I picked Tip-Top, and I still use him to this day. He is the greatest racer this world has ever known. I was happy to see that Tip-Top was in Banjo-Kazooie as well, but could you make a game without him? But how could you make a game without him, right? The other day, I went to the store and said to the clerk, I would like to purchase Heaven and Shell, Tip-Top 64, please. The clerk gave me a funny look and replied, we don't carry that. You will have to try another store. Now, anyone knows that if a store doesn't have all of the best merchandise, it goes under. And since this store was still standing, I figured I had the name wrong. What about Slow and Steady 64? I asked. Look, pal, the clerk said. All the games we have are in the glass case over there. He pointed to the N64 section. That was when I realized that Tip Top didn't have a game!
Oh my goodness.
Now, Diddy has his own games, and they count for Crunch too. Banjo has his own game, obviously. Timber, Drumstick, TT, and Pipsy all live on the island, so DKR is their game, even if it's called Diddy Kong Racing. Conker has not one, but two games coming out. That leaves Tip Top and Bumper. I don't know where Bumper came from, and frankly, I don't care.
Whoa.
I have a vision of Tip Top going on a wild adventure in which Tip Top learns not to be so clumsy and less frightened by things. I call it Tip Top Comes Out of His Shell, or One Shell of an Adventure, Tip Top 64. Aided by his slow-witted but well-meaning brute of a friend Tank Top, the giant living concert hall in PK, Tip Top must battle an evil hare. The tortoise and the hare have been locked in mortal combat since the beginning of time, who has kidnapped Tip Top's choir. At the end, Tip Top dusts off his old cart for one last race, and this time, the hare won't be caught sleeping. Now, I admit I have made some rash decisions before writing this letter. My original plan was to force you to make the game through terrorism. You can make these jokes in 1998, you see. It was before...
It was a different time.
Before the 9/11 times. Another flashback. Cue wavy lines. And this letter keeps going, my God. My plan was ready, and I ran from my house. I could not risk entering your HQ, so I hid outside in the bushes. As I waited, I pondered just how sharp the edge of my TV remote control really was. I thought about touching the seemingly blunt, rounded off edge, but could not, through fear that my fingertip would be sliced clear off. Suddenly, I heard someone exiting the building. The plan was to kill just one of the staff. That way, the rest could hire someone to replace him and make the game, or else. I leapt from my hideaway, trusty TV remote in hand, and unleashed handheld plastic fury at the man before me. When I stopped, I saw that my prey had endured, unscathed by my blade. He was looking at me, perplexed, like I was an impossible-to-get glass key. Damn, I thought. He must be some kind of superhuman. I should have thought of the possibility before. The makers of such fine games would have to be more than just your ordinary Johnny Lunchpail, Joe Blow, or John Q Public. With no options left, I fled from the scene, running like the wind back to my home. Foiled! Now, I'm sure you don't remember this, so I'll tell you why. You see, I live in Canada, not England, and since the attack took place within running distance from my home, it turned out I attacked a bakery, okay? I will spare you the tale of how I tried to raise tip-top awareness in my community by putting on a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles costume, spread bananas and balloons all over a go-kart track, and challenged people to race. I learned a few things that day. Let me just say that balloons float away. Running over bananas hinders your speed and doesn't increase it as you would like us to believe. I sat on my remote and not only was I not impaled, but my pants didn't even rip. I now use it as a club, striking people with a battery-filled end. When you hit... This is number 4 in the bullet points, by the way. When you hit the gas as you hear go, you do not zip forward at high speed, but run over and get stuck on the guy that works there who didn't get out of the way fast enough. So, after my misadventures, I decided a letter would be the best course of action. Make no mistake, you will give Tip Top his rightly deserved game. I'm sure once people read this, everyone will be chanting the name. Tip Top, Tip Top, Tip Top, Tip Top,
Tip Top.
Thanks for your time. Eric Rosenlund, a.k.a. Beb.
Wow, what a letter.
Yeah, I hadn't actually read this in full before I put it in our show notes. So this was my first time reading this since 1998, and oh my God.
That's a dangerous practice.
Yeah. Well, and here's the thing, like, this was a different time on the internet as well, where people can just say, I tried to murder somebody in the rare staff for not giving us a tip-top game, and it would just be taken in good nature, like, ha ha ha, you card.
Oh, you wacky.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, like, the internet was so much more wholesome back then, Dustin.
Yeah, it was a different time. Can't we just go back to those days when people just threatened people with murder?
Well, we knew everybody was joking, because people are just folk, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, just folk. So this was Lee's response to the letter. What is it about Tip-Top that inspires such mindless devotion? I'd have voted Timber's mad staring eyes the most likely cause of brainwashing in DKR, if anything. And Tip-Top does actually live on Timber's island with the rest of them. What other reason could there be for letting the clumsy, babbling idiot join in all the races? So, out of a nagging sense of fair play, I put the matter to DKR's designer, and he had this to say. There's been a huge demand for a new game starring Tip-Top, which has been totally unexpected. Tip-Top will return, but not yet in a game of his own. Look out for the little fella in 1999. I think... This was a reference to Diddy Kong Racing for the Game Boy Color.
Ooh, that one you talked about.
That one I talked about, yeah. So, meanwhile, this is Lee. This is back to Lee's voice. Meanwhile, if any other readers have an opinion on what exactly it is that makes Tip-Top such a favorite, we're always ready to feign a polite interest. That opened the floodgates, Dustin, and Tip-Top dominated the discourse in Scribes for the next several months.
I love, well deserved.
Well deserved. So we're not going to go through this whole history. I just wanted to set the stage for you and give everyone a little bit of a taste. So there are two more letters that, that I included. One of them, the one you're about to read, Dustin, is from...
I'm reading the next one?
Yes. It is another letter sent in from the author of the first letter, Eric Rosenlund, a.k.a. Beb. So this is how Beb responded to all of this after the floodgates opened and everybody expressed their opinion on Tip-Top. And this is from the December 1st, 1998 edition of Scribes.
Okay, here we go.
All right.
Hidey-ho there, Scriberinos. Three scribes ago, you fellas posted my mad pleas for a Tip-Top game, and I couldn't help but notice that your take on it was less than enthusiastic. What is it about Tip-Top that inspires such mindless devotion, you ask? I would hardly call it mindless. Not only was my letter posted, but you said the big T would be seen in 1999, and there were two letters backing me up in the next Scribes. Good job, Sir Slush 2.
Yikes. Oh, I guess I was a part of this then, wasn't I?
If you rare guys dropped Tippy from an eagle and exploded him, you'd be feeling the battery-filled end of my remote control against the back of your noggins real quick. And Will Gordy. But I'm kind of confused about Gordy. The first half of his letter was obviously inspired by mine, and the second part was in bad taste. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, we wouldn't want to send letters in bad taste now, would we?
Ooh, that would never happen. Could a mindless slob do that? Now I'll just assume Tip-Top will be in 12 Tales in 1999. Here is my argument. I sit in a cold gray room, listening to myself breathe through my helmet-mounted breathing apparatus. Suddenly, the area behind me is replaced by a small hologram of Tip-Top. He is dressed in a black cloak. How is the construction going? He inquires. On schedule, my master, I reply. The helmet makes my voice sound like James Earl Jones.
Oh, okay.
Good, good. Yeah, do you get it? Good, good. We may have problems lying ahead, he tells me. There is a disturbance in the force.
Uh-huh.
Yes, I have felt it too, I assure him, knowing what he will say next. Young Sky Conquer is too dangerous. He must be destroyed, he says. I have another plan, I tell him. Sky Conquer will turn to the dark side. And if he doesn't, Tip-Top asks, he may come after you and try to undo our creation before it is complete. I have laid a trap here, my lord, I explain. Let Sky Conqueror and his rebel friends come. They will find a fully powered and operational Death Star. Oh, like from the movie. Tip-Tap's image winks out, and I am once more alone in the room. Ominous music plays as I stare out into the cold depths of space. I would turn the squirrel or strike him down with my television remote, the ancient weapon of the Jedi. So as you can see, I expect 12 Tales to star Conqueror, have Tip-Tap as the final boss, and the game to take place on the forest moon of Endor. I trust everything is in order. Now, if you will excuse me, I have to go convince LucasArts to make Dark Forces 3, Leia's Double Trouble, in which Luke and Han are kidnapped by King K. Vader Rule. And it's up to Princess Leia, who can fly with her two twisted up braids as helicopter blades, and the big oaf Chewie in blue pajamas to save the day via barrel hopping. Maybe the voices or my ideas are getting mixed up a tad. Later, Deb, a.k.a. Eric Rosenlund. I'll remember a time when Star Wars references were seen as just quaint.
Yeah, I also liked that Beb said later. We spelled it L-8-E-R. Here's the thing, though, Dustin. I think Beb was onto something there, because how did Conqueror ultimately end? When it became Bad Fur Day, it ended in the bank vault that went into space, which
right.
was a parody. The Panther King was on the Emperor's throne from Star Wars, and you even had the little window from the Death Star. So
right.
So Beb's idea there of having Conqueror descend into mindless movie parodies, including Star Wars, was actually a completely accurate prediction of what happened with Conqueror, except Tip-Tap wasn't part of it.
Yeah, except for the big part.
Well, yeah, but still, that is onto something there. Like, oh yeah, Conqueror's just going to be like dumb movie parodies where, oh, what if Conqueror was in The Matrix? Remember The Matrix?
Oh, I remember The Matrix, all right. I'm laughing already.
Oh, yeah, I know things.
I've seen a movie.
You think that's bad? Oh, I'm sorry, Dustin. That...
Yeah, poor taste.
Poor taste. So, in that letter, responding to... called me out, because I enthusiastically supported the Tip-Tap cult. And there's another letter that they referenced where they called out, was it Will Gordy? Yeah. So Will Gordy actually wrote in a couple months after that, in the February 11th, 1999 edition of Scribes. This is the last one we're going to be reading. I'll read this one. Dear Scribes, how dare you not post my latest Tip-Tap message? My latest. You obviously have sided with the anti-Tip-Tap party. Why? Are you afraid of a hostile takeover? We Tip-Tap believers believe in violence, but for the good of mankind, not senseless. It would have made my Christmas to see my letter of support posted. Instead, I've been kicked out into the cold by you. I know your secret. You're really the Grinch in disguise. It just has to be. Anyways, Tip-Tap is the best character in DKR. I'll beat any of you TMT comparing arse shiners with my mini camcorder. Why is everybody beating each other with consumer grade electronics in these fan? Anyway, with my mini camcorder remote control, Tip-Tap 009 or Tip-Tap 009 sounds good to me, even if it comes from a Tip-Tap hater. Tip-Tap is the inner hyperkinetic, bunny-loving, Titanic-watching, Antonio Banderas-like Romeo in all of us. This is the late 90s, by the way. He needs this publicity so he can get a better woman instead of Pepsi, who I'm not dogging. She's not his type, or species for that matter. Not dogging, bro. Not dogging on Pepsi. Please give him a game, or at least make him a selectable multiplayer character in Perfect Dark. By the way, I looked up arse in the dictionary and got ass, see buttocks. Looks like you Brits are getting dissed by making someone turn even more pages to get the desired definition. And this was a huge Webster's Dictionary. Anyways, I've rambled long enough. Let's get tipped up in a game. Get my letter posted, get more followers, and beat the living arse out of all those who would dare to stand in front of our dream. Yes, our dream. You know you want to turn to the light side. Change your ways and follow me. There is good in you. I have felt it. And please call the game TipTup 64. I wish I had a nickel for every female companion that asked me why it's called Zelda 64 if the main character's name is Link. Yeah, because girls don't know video games, am I right?
Oh, classic 90s.
Not dogging them, bro. So that's just but a taste, but like that's about like 2% of all the tip-top letters inscribed from this era. Somebody also sent in a mock-up box art to Scribes of what their ideal platonic tip-top game would be. And it was a box art, and I put it here in the show notes for you, Dustin, of tip-top holding a baseball bat. And looking very angry on some, like, city streets. And it's called Tip Top's Beat 'em Up 64. With the little catchphrase slogan on the bottom. Clean up the mean streets or die trying.
Oh, man.
So...
He's so violent.
I know. People don't remember how zealous Rare Fandom was about Tip Top during this era. It's been completely forgotten. I like the buyout washed away so much of the history of this fan culture. And as the decades have rolled on, it's just become more and more forgotten. It just evaporated. So I wanted to bring that back for everyone to let you know that, yeah, you might not care about Tip Top. You might think Tip Top is just this character who gave away a couple jiggies in the Banjo-Kazooie series and was in this racing game that you heard about from your parents. But once upon a time, Tip Top was the end goal. He was what DK...
He was on top of the world.
He was the tip of everybody's tongues. And... yeah, like, everybody, like, as much as I want TT and Sea of Thieves nowadays, that's how much everyone wanted Tip Top to get his own game in 1998, 1999. So, do you think it'll ever happen, Dustin? Do you think Tip Top will ever get his own game? Maybe like what Jennifer suggested, and it's a rhythm game.
No.
Yeah.
So I don't.
So the problem with this is that we're now at a point in our history where it's a struggle just to get Donkey Kong or Banjo and Kazooie their own game. So I think Tip Top is pretty far down there on the turtle pole when it comes to, oh yeah, let's do something with this IP.
Yeah, I don't want to say it could never happen.
Of course. You know, of course.
Stranger things have happened, but I mean, it doesn't look very good for Tip Top right now.
I will say in the year 2024, it's not looking so hot for Tip Top to get his own game. And you know what, though? I'm not going to give up hope. I am not. Because here's my pitch. And it's my pitch to anybody at Rare listening to this. Or just Xbox Studios. The anxiety that Tip Top lives his life with. You know, we made fun of it. In 1997, it was a joke. But that ever-present fight-or-flight sensation that just made him perpetually doubt himself and every action he took, that's only become more relatable as our world has become more complex, more volatile, more lopsided for people just trying to get by. Social media,
right,
isn't this ever-present toxic voice in our head where people are threatening to kill each other, but not with remote controls. And I think a Tip Top game would be far more relevant to the zeitgeist today than it would have been in 1999. I think people would look at Tip Top and say, yeah, that's a modern action hero right there. That is somebody I could put my chips in, go all in on, and bet that that would become an overnight sensation. Far more than all these brave, stoic heroes, you know, muscular, wielding swords or, you know, AK-47s. They don't really represent the truth of our world. We're all fried. We're all just at wit's end in 2024. So I think Tip Top is exactly who Rare and Xbox should be getting behind. So I refuse to give up hope, Dustin. I really do.
Yeah, he's a relatable face.
I think TT will be in Sea of Thieves. I think Captain Black Eye will be an NPC in Sea of Thieves. I think Tip Top will not be in Sea of Thieves because Tip Top is getting his own game. And you know, even if he doesn't, he's still a strong supporting character in the Banjo-Kazooie series. Like, no, he's not. He's not as strong as Bottles or Tootie or Mumbo or Humba or Captain Blubber or Mr. Fit or Jolly Roger or Jam Jars. But, you know, he's doing all right. It's a matter of perspective. From Tip Top's point of view, Dustin, he's basically the starring character in the DKU because he's got a career that makes him happy. Uh-huh. He's got a loving family. His name is associated across the Rare Archipelago all the way up to Ghoulhaven Hall with clean toilets and poop and cum. Unlike Bumper, he's never been jailed for it. He's only made money for it.
Yeah, it's somewhere he went down the right path with his cum, but Bumper did not. He made the wrong choices.
Right. Don't be like Bumper, be like Tip Top. Tip Top will never be as popular as Pikachu. Like, us true believers writing into Scribes, we were deluding ourselves to think that Tip Top had a shot when Pokemon was getting 6 games a year and everyone was just all giddy about Pokemon Yellow version, you know, and just like, ooh, Pokemon Stadium's coming out. Ooh, Pokemon Snap. Oh. And
fancy.
Yeah, look, Tip Top was never a household name. But we true believers, we know that he's worth as much as 150 Pokemon combined. The cult of Tip Top may have grown quiet in the past 25 years, probably because most of them were jailed for assault and battery. But our hearts still beat for him as loud as a choir of 6 turtles in an indigestible music hall. He sings, he poops, he comes, he does it all.
He does it all.
This has been a File 2 production.